Today's Survivor Feedback Show with Hannah Shapiro is sponsored by our friends over at BetOnline. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you would be wrong. I hope you don't bet on that, because our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of sports and events and games to wager on, or let them bring Vegas to you. With their online casino and blackjack, they're all open 24 hours a day and all online. The BetOnline Casino never closes. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, even the weather. Visit their website or use your mobile device and join today to receive a welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code PODCAST1 for your 100% sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code PODCAST1 for your 100% sign-up bonus at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's very excited to spend a couple of moments with you. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our feedback show here after episode number 9, week 9 of Survivor Winners at War. And we have a real treat for you, because that I have here with me on the line, I'm able to look at her smiling face. Here is a Rob Has a Podcast legend. Here she is, a true star of the 30s of Survivor. Here is the great Hannah Shapiro. Hannah, how are you?
I love that my intro, every time I come on, gets more and more heightened, so that the expectations are really high.
They're very, I don't want to set the bar high. I don't want to give you too much pressure here, but I think people are very excited when you come back on. I'm always excited when you come on, and it's been always such a nice treat to get to talk to you. And here we are. And this is week number 9, and I'm sure people are going to say, oh, you just bucked Hannah because Adam got voted out this week. And no, not
the case. Didn't know. We chose the podcast date in advance. And I usually like doing right around after the merge. Early merge is when I like podcasting. We chose a date, and it just happened to be when sweet Adam Klein left. But yeah, I love coming on. RHAP people are my favorite. I feel like now that I've been to multiple live events, I've gotten to meet a bunch of patrons, and I always say RHAP people are the best part of the Survivor community.
Oh, well, that's very nice. Yeah. I'm sure that I appreciate it. I'm sure they all appreciate it. So always nice to chat with you. But first off, Hannah, how are you doing?
Oh man, isn't how are you so loaded these days?
Yeah, well, because I feel like that you've been very open about your anxiety in the past, and now this is a time when everybody is especially anxious. So I don't know if necessarily, like, are you better equipped to handle a very anxious time period because you are so anxious about things when there aren't necessarily a major crisis going on?
Well, I mean, for sure, my first reaction was, oh my God, the world is finally as anxious as I am. Yeah. This is insane. I definitely have been dealing with a lot of anxiety, as we all have. I really wanted to be able to take the tools I've learned about anxiety over the past couple of years and share them as much as possible. I did an Instagram live where people sent in questions about anxiety or panic attacks and tried to answer as many as possible. Because I know a lot of people are experiencing extreme amounts of anxiety, sometimes for the first time. And I know for a lot of people, they don't know what's happening. And so if anyone wants to reach out to me ever on my social media and ask me about anxiety, I'm always very, very willing to talk to you and help, because I happen to know what a panic attack feels like and the tools needed to manage that. But I know a lot of people are experiencing it for the first time. So hopefully, as the queen of anxiety, I can help in some way.
Okay. But you seem like you're doing good, doing well.
I mean, I think I have times where I'm very anxious and it's overwhelming. And I have times where I'm where I dive into something fun, like a podcast or taking over the CBS Instagram story, where I get to have fun and experience calm. And I think that's something a lot of us are going through, where it's not one thing. So if you see someone having fun, don't think that your anxiety or your feelings are weird. Or if you see someone talking about anxiety, don't feel guilty for being calm. I think it's, for me, it's been a real mixture of things. But I, you know, I'm very thankful that there are people like your wife, still essential workers, going to work and letting us all stay at home and just try to deal emotionally with what's going on.
You mentioned that you took over the CBS Instagram the other night. It was
a big hit.
People seemed to really enjoy it. What was some of the behind the scenes parts of your Instagram takeover?
First of all, I put in so much effort.
You really did.
In quarantine, you have a lot of time, even if you know you're working from home. So,
did you edit videos that went into the Instagram? I was very impressed. It was the most production quality I've ever seen put into. Like you're basically like on TikTok on Instagram.
I had this idea of doing a handful of pre-planned videos of that amazing new soundtrack cutting in. And I just thought I would like to have some live reactions to the episode. And I'd love some of these weird song videos. So I did do some pre-planning. I texted some of my Survivor friends, and it was actually my friend Alex Lewis, who's a big Survivor fan, helped me edit it together really quickly. But yeah, I had a ton of fun. Also, if I am shouting at any point, please let me know. I realize these headphones, I can't hear my own voice. If I'm Adam Klein-ing it,
you're good. Just,
please, I don't have like fancy noise canceling headphones, so I realize I sound very weird.
Well,
so
let me tell you
let
what
me know happened. If I'm Klein.
I would love it if you would, Adam Klein, because Adam Klein is a delight to watch on television.
A delight.
A great podcast guest. And so I would love nothing more if you were Kleining it this whole time.
I feel like he shouted less this season.
He shouted less?
Well, he was just as passionate. I think Adam, the reason he was such a like wonderful narrator. I mean, so many people were like, we're hearing from Adam so much. And I was like, it's because he does this great thing where he can talk about things in a cerebral way while also being very, very passionate about it. But I do think on 33, he was straight up shouting more. Mm-hmm. Like because if for those who don't know, when you're maybe like I am now with these headphones, but when you're doing an interview out there, the camera guy and the producer are pretty far away. But they have the boom mic, so you could whisper and they'd still hear you. And I feel like Adam's first time, he maybe shouted to them. Mm-hmm. And I thought this time he was just as passionate, but maybe a little less shouty.
Okay, less shouty.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I'll have to go back and do some research and see if when I eventually one day go back and rewatch season 33, is Adam shouting more in season 33 than he was in season 40, maybe because the winners are more like ready to be like listening in on conversations.
Yeah, I'm surprised no one in 33 heard him
heard some
in
of
his
things.
Interviews.
Yeah,
but really, thank you for having me here. I just want to have a fun time, and I hope that this can be a fun distraction for people.
Yeah,
and
I think
we don't have to take anything too seriously.
Well, this was a fun episode to talk about. There's a lot of different things that I want to get into with you. But I guess let's start with Adam. Of course, so many people have questions about Adam, including Benjamin Royer says, why did Adam have to go home on Passover, Hannah?
Listen, it seems anti-Semitic.
No.
That was a really bad joke.
Yeah. It's fine.
Why did he have to go home on Passover? Because Passover is about the suffering of the Jews. So Adam had to suffer.
It was appropriate then.
It stayed in the themes of the Passover. Passover, for those who don't know, is about the Jews suffering in Egypt and escaping slavery. And it's a lot about reflecting on past suffering and thinking about the world today and who's suffering in the world. So, of course, Adam the Jew had to suffer on Survivor that week.
Yeah.
Thanks, Benjamin Royer, for the question.
Yes. Did you think that this was the right move for the bigger... I've been calling them a voting blob.
Lion voting blob?
Well, the lions, they're part of the voting blob, but also I think it's the lions, plus also Sophie and Sarah and Kim and Denise, that I feel like...
Are they not lions? Can you break down the animals and who's what animal? Because I thought there were lions and hyenas, and from my sense of it, The hyenas were maybe some of the newer winners, like Nick and Michelle and Adam.
That's right.
And that the lions were more... But is there an in-between animal? Is there a... So, zebra's not there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there are lionesses that are out there, the Nalas of the world that are sort of like also big targets where, you know, I think that Tony would describe Kim certainly as a big target. I think she's probably the person who most fits in with the other big targets. But I think that I've called them the middle school women of these Sophie, Sarah.
Middle school
women?
Well,
there's new school and old school.
I thought you meant like some sort
no,
of...
No, no, it's just
because Sophie is the oldest of the new schools. Like I was confused. I got in a debate with my parents. Is Sophie old or new school?
Yeah.
Was a big
middle
question.
School. She's middle school.
Middle school. Yeah. She's middle school.
Yeah.
It really does make it seem like a middle school.
But
then
they're more, way more mature than the other people that are on this. So that's why it's a joke.
I've lost your original question though.
But anyway, asked me if the women were included in the lions, and I think that Kim is probably considered to be a big target, but I think that probably Sarah and Denise, I mean, Denise has been described as a hyena. Sarah, Sophie, and Denise probably less or so, but not considered necessarily to be the hyenas. I think that Denise actually may have gotten herself out of the hyena group by idling Sandra.
She grew her mane, her lion mane, when she killed Sandra.
She pulled off her hyena mask to reveal another lion.
I like this so much because I'm so sick of the overused, well, oversimplified goat thing.
Every
and so
season,
I think we should do new animals.
No, they've been trying to do a new analogy for seasons. But do you remember the season? It was, pilots and passengers. We're pilots here. The other people, those are the passengers.
I like lion and hyena more because I didn't, at least maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't read it as like a passenger or a goat. I read it as more like you're less obviously a flashy target, but you are still smart and attacking, which is a hyena. I like these animals that are more dynamic and not oversimplified.
And I think that Tony also is like getting this from the Lion King in that like for the hyenas to like attack like Mufasa, like they have to all like gang up together and like three or four of them need to take down one lion, where I think that also is a part of it. Where
did all the parents this season and just watch The Lion King with their kids right before they came
out?
Well,
there was the remake. I think that was probably a thing. Actually,
of course.
But going back,
I have the...
I think it might have been sort of like in the air, but if I recall, I think that didn't come out until like July when they were already playing the Winners at War. So I don't know. Maybe,
but did the soundtrack? Because I definitely
trailers.
Would... The trailers or just the soundtrack of Beyonce and Donald Glover would be enough to get me in the mood. Because I remember
that's the connection to Wendell.
Oh, yeah, of course. The Donald Glover.
Yes.
No, because the soundtrack that comes out right before people play, it's weirdly important because I remember Hamilton had just come out before 33. Hmm. And a bunch of us were listening to Hamilton right before we went out. And I think it influences the game.
In what way? So that you feel like that? So the game of Millennials versus Gen X was influenced by the story of Hamilton.
So I listened to a lot of, I didn't get through the whole soundtrack, so that's probably why I lost. But I listened to a lot of Aaron Burser right before I came out. And the line in that is like, don't let them know what you're about or what you're like. Don't let them know what you're about or what you're for. Like, talk less, smile more. There are like all these little things that I like had in my head. Then it turns out Burr's the bad guy. I would have won if I had finished the soundtrack.
Yeah. Okay.
But you asked, was this a good move for the lions?
Yeah.
And the lionesses?
Yes.
I mean, I feel like stuff like this had to happen because we saw in the early part of the game, a lot of the I'm going to try this metaphor, hyenas sort of ganged up and got a bunch of the old school lions out. And I think there came a point where some of these smart lions, like the Tysons, the Tonys, you know, Kim, Jeremy, like they realized if we don't start getting out people who maybe we might even, you know, want to go farther with, it's appealing. But if we don't start getting them out, we're all going to end up on the jury and we're going to have a final three of hyenas. And so I think that it was actually pretty smart. And I think Adam smartly was trying this episode to get someone who I am very, very impressed with this season, who I think has also earned her lionessing Sarah out. But I think the hyenas should be wanting to stick together, and it's smart for the lions to get some of them out so that they don't take over the game.
I think that going back to, or staying on lions and the hyenas, I do think that Adam is the most capable of the hyenas too. It seemed like that he was going to people like Nick and Michelle, and maybe
Ben.
It was under the I don't know if he was able to get Ben on board with anything that he was doing, but to say like, hey, we need to go after Sarah. She's connected. And I think that Tyson correctly identified that, like, if Adam is able to get a bunch of people together, if he's, you know, it seemed like that he was going back to Denise trying to get something going. I do think he was the right person to pick off, because that Nick and Michelle, they're on the bottom, but they have nothing going on. They're like waiting for somebody else to tell them a plan. Nobody is going like, hey, oh, I'm going with Nick's plan going into this tribal council.
I think Adam very smartly is something that he does well, and that he did well on my season as well, is, you know, it's his ability to recognize that he's a hyena, and then in order to try to win the game, he has to really prove himself as a hyena lion combo. And I think that, you know, could Adam have, you know, slowed down, and would he have still been eliminated? Maybe not. But I think, you know, when you're out there and some of these players came in with a lot more, I think the word spotlight or pizzazz, maybe pizzazz hasn't been used, but
I don't think already that's been used. It's the first I've heard anybody say pizzazz.
All right. So some of these people came in with more pizzazz. And on top of that, Adam did make a bunch of mistakes in the early part of the game. I think Adam felt that there was a need to prove himself. And so that self-awareness is almost why he made the mistakes that he did, because he knew, I'm a hyena and I want to show, like Tyson, that I can do things. And Tyson recognized it.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is somewhat of a mistake is also perhaps more necessary than it looked.
Yeah.
I
do think that this idea of the embracing the role of the hyena, and I don't mean anything derogatory by it with Adam, I think really kind of was his game the whole season, where going back to the beginning when he was off going to the well with Denise, when they were talking about how he was they got lost. Oh, we got to vote out Adam. You heard him at the beginning of the season talking about things like, there are people that have a relationship like Jeremy and Natalie, Rob and Amber's marriage. You heard him talking about like, hey, these are the big targets. Why are people worried about me? And he was able to get the target onto Natalie there, who was very connected to the Lions, if not a lion herself, at the beginning of the game. And then I think that he was able to sort of like lead the charge against the people that were the Lions, but also still trying to maintain that relationship with Rob and some of the Lions that were in the game. So I do think that he embraced that role, but it was just too much double dealing to get people comfortable with him.
I mean, I think Adam came in running. I think that if you're a super fan and you're playing with winners and you're ecstatic to be there, I think Adam came in sprinting. And I think some of the sprint ended up very, very good, like switching the vote to Natalie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but when you're moving that fast, you're also going to make mistakes. And I think some of those mistakes also caught up to him, but also some of that sprint worked well. And, you know, you can't deny that Adam was probably one of the more dynamic parts of the season.
Absolutely.
And with the passion and the excitement. And there's a reason he narrated, like, three times his tribe won a challenge and they cut to him, a confessional of his going out. And usually when a tribe wins a challenge, you get a loser talking about the tribal. That's usually how editing works. But Adam was playing so passionately and speaking so excitedly about it that they kept cutting to him even when his tribe was winning. And I mean, I'm sure we'll dive into Adam's gameplay because I'm accidentally here for his boot episode. Mm-hmm. But I think that the season was made better because Adam Klein was sort of the voice of all fans if they were playing with their heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to ask you about something that we stumbled into going back and looking at Millennials versus Gen X earlier this season, where Adam ended up getting into a bit of trouble around this time in Millennials versus Gen X. And we went back and were listening to some old podcasts and we came across where there's a conversation in Millennials versus Gen X where you and Zeke are talking about how Adam is a tough ally to have in the game. And I think that we saw that where it seems like that he does, he has such exuberance that he thinks that he is he maybe bites off more than he can chew in terms of that, that he plays maybe a bigger game at times than he should be playing, where he's not just like talking a lot to his allies, but also talking to people who are potentially your adversaries. And you describe this as being, a tough ally to have in the game. Is that fair to say? And did you see that in this game?
Yes, I think that's fair. I think that something I love about this, I will preface this, about this all winners season is that so many of these winners that, of course their edits, their original season showed flaws as well, but we're getting to see so many more dimensions of these winners and things that were only touched upon in 33, were shown a little bit more in full this season. And that's not, I enjoy more flawed characters in the best way. So definitely there have been things this season that I've watched that remind me of playing with Adam. To answer your question specifically, I mean, yes, I think we all do things that are frustrating out there. And nobody, not even the winner of a season, plays perfectly. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean they shouldn't have won or anything of that.
You're saying sometimes the flaws of the winner end up getting hidden to sort of like serve that they don't want to end a season on, wait, why did this person won? They made so many mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of the things Adam accused me of in Final Tribal, maybe going off, being sporadic or whatever, were things that he did as well. And I definitely remember a time in 33 where I think something that Adam both does well and is a flaw is that he connects with allies that he's not necessarily voting with. The problem is, I remember very specifically when he went to Taylor about a vote that we were doing and it ended up blowing up and making it much more difficult for all of us.
Right.
While telling Taylor could have potentially been good for him, it did, it didn't help the trust with the rest of his allies. And in 33, him and I were able to mend fences and he played a great game and was able to get to the end.
We saw a similar situation play out with Boston Rob in that same thing where he told Rob that, hey, this is what's going on. The Parvati is going home, but you and I are still going to work together. And then Rob blew up the whole thing. And then he wasn't able to really get his game back on track after that.
Yeah. So I think a quick devil's advocate and defense of Adam, he sometimes did it in Millennials versus Gen X and it did work for him. He had a relationship with Brett that was similar where he would be like, let's have each other's backs, but we're not voting together. So sometimes it did work. The Rob vote was interesting because, it did remind me of some of the times it didn't work in 33. And I think for Adam this season, a lot of the things he was fighting against when he got to the merge all sort of weirdly tie back to him telling Rob. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy to judge from home and say, oh, why did he tell Rob? But we don't know the details of he must have had a strong relationship with Rob and similar to Brett thought that maybe that would work.
Yeah.
It's a much different player, but I think a lot of the trust got
broken. They're both from Boston.
They both are big Red Sox fans. No, I just feel like, for example, I could see like someone like Denise, Jeremy, Michelle, none of them fully, especially Jeremy and Denise, didn't seem to really fully trust him again after that. And unfortunately, in the early merge, like if you become the target, a lot of the things that protect people from going home are relationships. You see on the other end of this, Sarah Lucina, you know, Adam tried to get Sarah out. And Sarah, someone who everyone before the game started said they wanted out. If you look at any pregame press, Kim held up a thing and said, Sarah, I don't trust you. Sarah now has very deep relationships with Kim, with Sophie, with Tony. And so it's her relationships and trust that have protected her in the early merge. And unfortunately for Adam, you see that even though he's so smart and aware that he's in trouble, he doesn't have the trust and the almost like the more traditional survivor relationships to protect him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also wonder maybe is that like the difference between playing with first-time players and playing with like these veterans, and especially a veteran like Rob, who's a five-time player, where, you know, that if you tell somebody who's a first-time player out there, they may not necessarily know exactly what the best move to make with that type of information, where, you know, a first-time player is like, oh, an olive branch, okay, great. And maybe that type of strategy of connecting with everybody works better on a rookie season.
I want to say yes. I mean, Taylor is not Boston Rob,
That's
but it
fair.
Also blew, fair. It also blew up then. I mean, Taylor didn't know quite what to do with it. Weirdly though, and I wonder what you think, I feel like it's actually a more traditional gameplay element that was missing here, which is really just the basic relationship and trust thing. Like, I don't know if that's an all-star thing or what, but, yeah, I mean, I definitely think someone like Boston Rob, if you give him an inch, he knows how to take a mile. But on a newbie season, if you give someone a little bit of information, like, I'm not voting with you, what to do with that is harder to navigate.
Don't forget, though, Taylor was spurned after Figgy was gone. So he was somebody who had his back against the wall. He got justice for Figgy.
Justice for Figgy.
I want to talk about this exit from the game that Adam had. And I really want to just get your take on Adam as a character, because I really did feel like that his exit from the game was such a, you know, great microcosm of his journey on Survivor, and especially his journey this season, where he had this harebrained idea of, which is not so harebrained, definitely in International Survivor, there have been idols in a similar location, even in Survivor, South Africa. And Adam was saying like, hey, I'm going to go for it. And I do feel like that, you know, I'm going to, this is crazy. It may not work. I'm going to go and I'm going to do it anyway. I do feel like that exit from the game is just like so fitting in terms of Adam as a character.
I think it's so Adam. I mean, you have to give it a little bit of context. When Adam played on my season, he found two idols and an the steal a reward thing up in the thing. So you're talking about someone who, I mean, he's not Ben or someone with idols, but you're talking about someone who, when he goes for an idol or something, it's worked out before. I also think he's just so passionate that why not? You're in this pickle, you know, you've been running at a sprint. Some things have gone great. Some things have gone bad. It becomes an iconic moment instantly.
Did you think it was going to work, Hannah?
No.
Okay.
Although to Adam's credit, he had seen this in International Survivor.
Yeah.
And he also, the thing on the booth looked similar to the idol Denise had showed him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's easier to sit at home and based on the storytelling, think this doesn't seem like it's going to work. Versus when you're out there, you don't know, like you, it's not a TV show. You're not seeing the narrative. So when I say I don't think it's going to work, yeah. I was also watching it from home. I think the problem now is that if next season ever gets to film, the first tribe's going to enter tribal council. Jeff's going to say, "Welcome to tribal," and they're going to all sprint off looking
People
for
are
idols.
Gonna be like, pulling on everything. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this poor production designer is going to be so upset.
In terms of what Adam's attempt to do it, and again, if people are knocking him for trying this, I mean, the guy that he sat there in front of the whole tribe, that they basically asked, like, "Does anybody have anything to tell me? Does anybody want to reassure me?" Like, it was dead silence. I mean, that it was the most obvious situation ever that they were all voting for him. And then he got up and tried to, like, take the thing off of the podium. So, I mean, he waited until, like, everybody knew that he was going home no matter what. So nothing ventured, nothing
gained.
Why
wouldn't you try? And then Probe sort of prodded him along. He said, he sat back down.
Here,
and then he said, "Are you sure?" Okay.
Yeah. So let me actually bring in a clip about this, because we want to know, that was Jeff too hard on Adam? Let's listen to Adam after he is trying to take the thing off. Okay. Jeff is going to ask Adam a few questions.
Then maybe that was an idol. I don't know.
You're convinced it's not?
Is it? Can I play it? I want to play that.
You want to play this?
Yeah, can I play that?
This thing that you can't get off of the voting podium.
Yeah, I want to play that.
So, if that is an idol, it would be historic.
Yeah.
The first idol ever hidden at Tribal Council in plain view of all players, selected by you and played for you.
Exactly.
That is not a hidden immunity idol.
Worth a shot.
That is just part of the voting podium.
Okay. Did you think Jeff was too hard on Adam?
Initially, I thought that it was Adam sat down after doing it, and Jeff said, "Are you sure?" Mm-hmm. Which means that Jeff is the one who led
Adam. He had him
going
in circles, yeah.
Well, Jeff led Adam to try to play the podium. Adam was just trying, sat down, and Jeff was like, "What, you want to play it?" Although at the very end, he did the Snape from Harry Potter always, that kind of showed a love for Adam's passion. I mean, played a
I'll play you that clip.
It was worth a shot.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. You loved Lily Potter always.
Mm-hmm.
I played a fake game of Survivor in college. I was in Max Dawson's Survivor class in college, and the prize was just not having to take the midterm.
Mm-hmm.
There was a hidden immunity idol hidden in like the TA's like house lounge thing in a locker, and you had to solve a clue to try to get into the locker. Instead of solving the clue, I learned how to pick a lock with like a soda can, and I broke into the house and I tried to soda can break into the locker so I could try to get there before the clue. So that's what I did because I wanted to get out of the midterm. I broke the lock. I got a bunch of metal stuck up in the lock, and I did not get it.
Okay. Did they know it was you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Was it? Was it worth the shot?
It was worth a shot, and there was not even 2 million. Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed that moment. No, I just think any super fan of the show watching
super
Adam
duper
or
fan.
Any super duper fan, any fan who likes, I don't know, $2 million. Why wouldn't you take that shot?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was wonderful. You keep saying people might give him shit. There are other things to shit on Adam Klein for. Don't do this. This was a great moment. just kidding.
It seems
Adam.
Just based on the response that I see from him on social media, it does sound like people are being hard on him about this. And really, it was an iconic moment. And that's really all you can hope for on Survivor.
Yeah. Listen, you want to be a hyena that makes a lion-sized splash. Oh, God,
what do you think about when everybody was getting up? Should that have been when Adam attempted to go and see if he could grab it on the just way to like what about on the
he
way to the voting booth?
He was too busy love quarreling with Ben
with
at
Ben.
That point.
Yeah,
everyone was whispering the vote, and him and Ben were in a lover's quarrel.
Yeah,
quarrel.
Yeah,
quarrel.
Yeah. Well, why you're a Ben fan? Why couldn't Adam and Ben get along?
I've met Ben one time outside of all this. He was very funny and weird and lovely. It seemed like I think the funny thing with the two of them is it seemed like they wanted to work together. Mm-hmm. Like they both like Adam wanted to work with Ben because he, one of the newer players. And Ben seemed like he wanted Adam's, he called it expertise or guidance. And they just seemed to really not like each other. It's like they both knew strategically it'd be good. And, they're just every episode, I think we got 3 minutes of them fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot of screen time to be spent on Ben and Adam. They're both, they're very different.
Ben versus
people,
Adam season 41, Adam's tribe versus Ben's tribe.
Oh gosh. And they just fight at each other across the mat. Listen, I like them both. Adam is very passionate and very serious. And from my brief experience with Ben, he's a little more goofy. But
not around Adam.
What?
Not around Adam.
No, I don't know what they're. Wendell and Michelle dated and they were on an island together, but Ben and Adam were more like exes.
They have a worse relationship. Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it became almost comical. Like, it was, if I imagine a guy sitting in an editing booth being like, we have 20 hours of footage of Ben and Adam fighting, and then being like, should we use any of it? We should use it all.
Use it all. Put it all in there. So many fun Adam moments in this season. And also that I felt like that there were so many different like shades of Adam's character and that came out in, especially in this episode where we had Adam, he seems to do a lot of different voices also. In addition to his regular
character actor now.
Yeah.
He does like, what was this? He was like,
yes. Okay. So this is Adam
playing with fire.
Yeah. Adam talked about what it would be like for him to be watching, that he envisioned himself in the future watching this episode. And this was him reacting to watching himself.
He's playing with so much fire. Please don't let it burn him.
Oh man,
that's scared Adam watching Adam.
I love this. You have a whole montage.
Yes, here is Adam talking about how that he is going to be able to maybe save himself with the idol. Here's this voice.
In the chance that I'm right,
be a pretty epic way to save myself.
So he does that voice. And then at the end of the episode, here is him talking about how, who should he bequeath his fire tokens to?
Your fire tokens to any player still in the game. Give it to Demise. Even if you knew I was going home.
Screw all of you.
I mean, you can't, oh my God. You can't deny. I don't understand how a fan, he was just so, guys, he was so passionate and so invested that he was watching himself, watching it. And it was just, he was all in. I mean, you can't.
Screw all of you.
I really enjoyed, I felt like this season of Adam captured Adam in a way that was much more full, honestly, as weird as it sounds, having, he hasn't lost yet, let's be clear.
Yeah, he's on the edge of extinction.
There's an edge.
Yeah.
There's an edge of extinction.
Can I play one more? Can I play one more Adam quote from this episode? Okay, this was Adam talking about how he was so relieved he didn't get voted out at the Wendell Tribal Council.
I was so incredibly nervous. but I'm here. I'm here.
Didn't he say, breathe out, you're okay? Didn't he say that? Or am I missed?
I don't know.
He was like, you're here.
Yeah.
This is, guys, this should be the quarantine meditation. If you're getting anxious, just be like,
I'm here.
I'm here.
Screw
no,
on.
Listen. But you know, as passionately as he was playing, I actually think I think that in some
sorry. This is my favorite new sound clip of all time.
I'm here.
Screw out of
I'm here. I feel like as passionate as he was playing, he also, I mean, there was a moment in the beginning of the episode where Michelle came to him and was like, I hate everyone. I'm so pissed off. And hadn't she just tried to vote Adam out, or am I making that up? No, Nick.
No,
Adam.
She did try to vote out. She should try to vote
out. So like Adam is as passionate as he is.
Yeah.
He's also somewhat like not only acting on emotions because Michelle is so angry and she's venting to
Michelle's
Adam.
Like, screw all of you.
I think her clip was like, I hate everyone, which I've given that confessional before. So,
But what does Adam do? Adam tells her, he's like, all right, well, I have something that I believe there's an idol at Tribal, which is, again, you know, that not for anything. I mean, if he was actually right, I mean, Michelle could have gotten up during that whole melee and grabbed the idol. Like Adam, that he was playing with so much fire.
He
could have got burned.
Yeah, he told someone about the idol at Tribal who had just tried to vote him out. That's Yeah, this Tribal idol. Gosh, the podium.
Playing the podium.
What a fun thing for audiences.
One day there will be that idol at Tribal Council and Adam will be vindicated. And then he'll be like,
screw all of you.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
All right. Hannah, let me thank a sponsor before we get into it. I want to ask you about the rest of the game besides Adam here, but let me take a moment and thank our sponsor here, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is doing something really great because they are putting people in touch with online professional counselors who can help. And, you know, as we know, so many of us could use it right now, especially you stuck at home, feeling isolated, worried about the state of things. BetterHelp has online professional counselors there that you can talk to, a licensed online therapist, and find relief. BetterHelp therapists specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, insomnia, family conflicts, and more. You'll connect with your counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential. And I actually did this this week. I talked with a online counselor, just like we're doing right now. We're on video. You could also do it on the phone as well. If you don't want to do a video call, you can also message your counselor. Super easy to set up. You can also get the app, so you can also be in communicado with your online counselor. Simply fill out the questionnaire to help assess your needs. Get matched with a counselor that you'll love in less than 24 hours. If you don't love who you get matched up with, you can switch it out and get somebody else. Easily schedule secure video or phone sessions with your therapist, plus exchange unlimited messages. And of course, if you're unhappy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time for no additional charge. You can get professional help whenever you want it, wherever you are. BetterHelp is a truly affordable option too. And our listeners can get 10% off your first month with the discount code RHAP. So why not get started today? Go to BetterHelp.com/RHAP. That's BetterHelp.com/RHAP. Talk to a therapist online and get some help. All right.
I definitely encourage people to reach out, whether through BetterHelp or other sources. If you're struggling, really reach out and get help. There's no shame or stigma in needing to talk to someone during these times. They're incredibly stressful, and I think it's really important that everyone get help if you feel you need it. Between this and the weighted blanket ad of a different podcast, you really scheduled these well.
Yes, I try to. You can talk to the counselor who was ready to say,
I'm here.
Oh, man. Yeah, they'll say, I'm here. And then when you vent about your family or your friends, they'll say, screw everyone.
Screw all of you.
Screw all of you. I'm here.
Okay.
It's so funny. Guys, I'm just so proud. Before we move on past Adam, it was really fun watching my friend this season. I, as an alumni, you get to meet a bunch of people and how you love people. But you know, Adam is like a brother to me. Any critique I give him is only out of sisterly love. And, I talked to him right before he left and he was just so excited to get to play with all his idols. And I think, you know, RHAP people are big fans. And I think that when a fan plays so passionately and with all their heart, you know, we
should
just
love them. Did you give Adam any advice?
Did I give Adam advice? I feel like I did. I'm trying to think what it was. I said, listen, there's an idol at Tribal on the podium.
God, I think that's a terrible idea.
I tried to give him a little advice. I only spoke to him right before. It was Wendell who really sat down with me. And I said, go into the woods and start shouting Dom's name until he appears. That's the advice I gave Wendell.
Shouting whose name?
I said, shout Dom's name. Be like, Dom, where are you? And you'll find him in the woods. Did I give Adam? I feel like I told him to take a breath and see what's actually happening around him.
Yes.
Versus
I'm
just
here.
Yeah, really go, I'm here. Versus just making assumptions based on people's reputations.
Yeah.
But no, it was just so fun to watch Adam. And I think, you know, I always, you know, you've mentioned the shit or him responding. I just always want the audience to be as smart as possible.
Yeah.
And know that nobody, you know, whether you get voted out trying to play a podium or you lose at the end, no one is trying to play dumb. They're really playing with how they see it at the time.
Yeah.
And the storytelling is going to make it look one way or another. But I just encourage people to try to have some empathy and assume the best of the people out there.
I think that most people do. I mean, it's a show that, you know, 7 or 8 million people watch a week. You know, there could be 200 or 300 a-holes out there.
I know. It's so hard. I feel like I got in trouble for responding to an a-hole recently. But it's like we're all stressed and quarantined. Well, I took over the CBS Instagram, and I think what it is, and I won't be doing this further, so don't send me shit hoping I respond. Screw all of you. We're all have heightened stress, and this is supposed to be a fun thing, and this guy just came at me for no reason, said I, you know, couldn't hack it on Survivor, all these things. Turns out he had applied and hadn't gotten on.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where I blocked him. And then in a real twist, his brother messaged
me. Oh, wow.
And apologized on behalf of his other brother.
Yeah.
And
well, how was the brother so knowledgeable about everything?
So he, like, apparently he had called his brother and explained that he had gotten in this fight. So his brother messages me.
Is it bad if I think I know who this is?
I'm not going to name names.
No,
we'll talk
please
after.
Don't. Please don't. We don't want. We don't give out negative attention.
His brother said, "I'm so sorry for my brother," and we had some words, and you know, I think of any season for an audience to try to learn to see things in a more perceptive way. RHAP listeners already do. That's why they're the best of anyone in the Survivor community. But it's this season where we see all the winners and their flaws. And to assume that anyone, you know, the storytelling is always going to tell why some people won and why some people lost. And to be very, very clear, I'm not saying those people shouldn't have won or these people shouldn't have lost, but I just think never assuming that, you know, the people who get voted out or lose at the end just were too silly to see that the winner was going to win. It's a storytelling thing. And everyone out there, when you're out there, is flawed. And I always just hope for a smarter audience or at least a more empathetic audience. So it can be this fun thing.
Right.
But yeah, that's how I got too involved with my troll's brother.
Yes. Okay. And it's a story also that is being told like with that's already happened. So
this
it's sort
is
of
not
like
Big Brother.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the newspaper article is being written, you know, after the event has already happened.
Yes. And I just remember so distinctly as a losing finalist being on the red carpet and this reporter from this magazine asked me, well, did you think you had a chance to win it all? And it's like, what do you think that I was just like, oh, I think I want to like lose at the end. No.
Are you kidding me? Have you seen my edit? I've been that so far these first 38 days, I don't think I have a winner edit going into this final tribal.
Well, no, I just was like, at the time, what I was seeing was a bunch of flawed people, and I was making choices based on that, and I had my flaws, and I was wrong, and I can own that. But I think that we can, as a fan community, just take this season and remember that these winners are awesome. There are reasons they should have won and that they did. I also think we can just be smarter watchers and across the board, like people make mistakes because it looks different out there. And the storytelling, is this what a loser harps on though? The storytelling? Am I just like the epitome of a loser?
It's always a good reminder to, you know, talk about, you know, that these things are that look, everybody for the most part is actually very good, especially on a season such as this. These people have won their own seasons, and then in this season now, there's only one winner, and we only get to see one winner's story here in this season, and 19 people are going to probably look not so great in this season, and it just goes to show you that this is the same person who also looked great against 17 or 19 other people in their season where they look great. So it's
one person
wins, everybody else looks dumb. And we have to sort of like pull back the curtain a little bit and try to remember that.
I just, of all the people to understand it, I feel like the RHAP community is the one that could, would hear this and understand what I'm saying. Then again, you know, just to clarify, I guess, I am not saying that an edit lies.
Yeah.
There is 1,000% truth. I just, when I see Adam and people, you know, giving him any sort of rub, I'm like, there's a story being told. Mm-hmm. And anybody, any season, the past 4 years since I was on, I guess I try to approach it with a little bit of benefit of the doubt. And
you've said that. You've
empathy.
Always said that. And I think you said that from when I interviewed you on the red carpet after your season, that you talked about how you didn't like the way that people analyzed you in your season and you were going to approach things differently as an alumni.
I feel like 90% of it was great. And I think it's totally fair to sit on a podcast and analyze what we're seeing. Like, I think that's fun and great. For me, I didn't want to listen to the analysis necessarily my season because I knew what was coming and I knew what the analysis was leading towards. And I'm pro analysis. I think when I said that on the red carpet, there were a few alumni that were just so cruel and also so riling up fans, not taking into consideration that we're only being shown snippets. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, when I became an alumni, I was just like, I want to analyze hard and have fun because that 90% of it's great. What you do is great. But I don't ever want to be like, oh, this person is so silly. They didn't do this when most likely they did all that. We're just not seeing it. It's not about not analyzing it. I just think it's about being just a smarter, more empathetic, viewer, especially in these times when I was really, really upset. And I know it's no one in the RHAP community, but I was really upset that Wendell was getting as much hate as he was getting and also a lot of racist stuff sent his way.
Yeah.
There's no excuse to send someone that much hate when I'm not saying that again, that edit wasn't true. I just also know there are all these other qualities. And in this time, especially,
I think we
could
also say that that edit wasn't true that Wendell ended up getting.
I wasn't at their Friends with Benefits. No, I mean, I don't, from my experience with Wendell, he is wonderful and lovely. And it was fascinating to watch him be villainized, but that doesn't mean we send anyone hate.
Yeah, especially racist hate.
I mean, that there's just no excuse ever.
Yeah. So, you know, we see the good and the bad in the Survivor world at times. But like, listen, it's not the people that are listening to the show. Right.
No, 95% is great. And I'm going to do better at not getting involved with the 5% of trolls and their families.
Yes. Good call.
That's on me. Okay. That's on me.
Right, well, let's talk about some of the other people that are going,
because
we still have so much stuff to get to here today. Let me ask you a question from DP on Twitter. Says, where are those darn trust clusters? Is it Sarah and Sophie versus Tony and Jeremy and Kim versus Michelle and Nick? Where does Denise fall? Okay, you in your season, you and Zeke were talking about the trust clusters going
the
on.
Cereal.
That was right on the heels of Steven talking about the voting blocks. How do you see this group? Because now we're down to 10, and now we can sort of start to see a little bit of like the big picture of how the rest of the game might go. We have Michelle and Nick. They are certainly at the bottom, no matter, you know, their votes are up for grabs. They could get voted out next, or more likely, they'll be pulled into somebody else's plan as pawns of, okay, well, you guys are two votes that are up for grabs in this bigger move that we want to make. Then we have our voting blob of eight people, which I predict is going to be splitting up soon, probably as early as this week. How do you see this voting blob breaking down?
So going into the merge, I saw that two of the swap tribes seemed to band together against the third swap tribe. I'm so sorry. I never know tribe names,
so,
but
yeah, it was Dakal and Yara, which was the new tribe, which Adam was a part of and now is out. But then they were ganged up against the new Sele tribe, which was Wendell, Nick and Michelle.
So initially I saw, you know, this is what's happening in the merge. And by that happening naturally, I think that's when the Lions sort of came together and said, we can't let this game be overrun with hyenas or else none of us will get to the end or get anywhere close. So the initial trust cluster of Lions came from this very logical tribe joining. And I do agree with you. I think at some point soon, as we heard a lot about easy votes this tribal. So just to reference that, what we're being told, as easy as a vote as Nick and Michelle on the outs are, these are all winners. We know that no one wants to be the eighth place. And so at some point, that is going to shift. I see a lot of people, you know, with these close relationships. I feel like Sarah Lucina is really at the epicenter of a lot of this, of the close relationships within the two tribes, which I am so impressed with, again, because she was the one who so many people wanted out. But it really, she ties together so much. It's her and Sophie and their close relationship. You know, they have their advantages, idols together. It's her and Kim. Kim seems really close to her. It's her and Tony. The Cops Are Us 3.0. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see these pairs. We even saw in the preview talk about breaking up some of these pairs. Specifically in the preview, I believe they referenced Sophie and Sarah. So I think the first move using the easy vote seemed like it's going to be against some of these pairs with Sarah really at the epicenter. I mean, I'm so impressed with Sarah's game.
No, Sarah's been super impressive in this game. And I think that her game this season to me has been a little bit like Sandra in Game Changers, in that I think that Sandra came into Game Changers as, oh, she's the queen, she's the two-time winner. But I think that people were like, yeah, but she won because she was, you know, underestimated. And then Sandra came into Game Changers and then really like turned that completely on its head, where it's like, oh, you think I'm underestimated? Well, now I'm going to play a really boss game here. And I don't think that Sarah has been as, you know, brash as Sandra was in Game Changers. But I think that from the outside perspective, I think that this is the game that at least makes me say, What? You know, I hadn't really been looking forward to going back and watching Game Changers one day, but I do think that when I go back and watch it eventually, I really am going to have a keen eye on Sarah and seeing like were there signs of this game that she was playing in Game Changers? Was there more here that I was missing in Game Changers after watching her play in this season?
Yeah, I think she has this incredible ability to both build very, very deep friendships and be super intimidating and like boss in like the best way. I think that's sort of the Sandra Game Changers connection you're making where, you know, she was just like you know, in that confessional when she's like, he's making a mistake by coming after.
Yeah, you want to hear it? This was actually
Yeah, let's do it.
This was very intimidating.
I'm still here. Net cut two.
Yeah, that Sarah was not happy when she heard that Adam was putting her name out there.
Adam, you threw my name out. Mistake, brother. You don't throw my name out, okay? And you're going to learn the hard way. And you're going to learn why you don't throw my name out. Because your ass is going to go home.
Mistake, brother.
I mean, you know, in fairness to Adam, did I think he was targeting one of the most powerful connected people in the game? Yes, I think that was the right thing. But damn. I mean, what a badass confessional. What a sort of like, I mean, I just, for her, it reminds me a little tiny bit of Parvati in Heroes Villains, where Parvati, everyone wanted Parvati out. And yes, it's different because, you know, she had Russell, her sort of shield she could beat and all this stuff, but everyone wanted Parvati out and yet she made it so deep. Mm-hmm. Wait, yeah, was it Heroes Villains? Am I saying? Yes, it was. And I can't help but be, I mean, I'm impressed with a bunch of the people left and I'm sure we'll hit on all of them, but, she really feels like she's at the center of this 8 or whatever that number is now.
Yeah. So I don't know if I would have, Sarah at the center. I wonder if is it Sarah? I guess that, if you were going to sort of like draw like the spokes that are coming out of it,
I wonder if it's
Sarah or is it Kim? I wonder, but I feel like that Sarah has the connections to Tony and to Ben that Kim doesn't have. So I think you're probably right that it's Sarah. Well, I think that what's interesting to connect people on is who knows about what advantage. And so that Tony helped Sarah get her advantage. So that Tony knows about Sarah's advantage. Also, that Sarah knows about Sophie's idol. Sophie knows about Kim's idol. So you have all those people connected.
And I'm not necessarily saying I think Sarah wins. I have a couple of winners picks, but I just think that, like, in terms of what is holding this, you know, alliance of 8 together, like, who is the person that, like, has these very deep connections and relationships, it does feel like Sarah feels at the center of that wheel. Kim, it's incredible. Kim, what Kim's done is incredible as well, where people were so intimidated by her as a player that she couldn't have a conversation in the beginning of the game. We have that amazing scene of her walking up to them and everyone stops talking. And yet Kim has come up from the bottom and is now very connected and with an idol.
So here's where I think that this is kind of interesting. So just like in sort of like sketching this out, this voting blob of 8, that I do think that we have this one side of it, which is Sarah at the center connected with Tony and Sophie and Ben. Like she has like seemingly like her three.
Tony, Sophie,
Ben with
Ben.
Sarah. So that's those four seem very connected through Sarah. Then they're also working with this other four, which I think kind of has Kim at the middle, where with a connection with Jeremy, Denise, and Tyson. And I think that maybe it's the triangle of Kim, Sophie, Sarah, sort of like connecting the voting block.
Well, you had that amazing moment at the challenge where there. What?
Go ahead.
Moment? Did I say it wrong?
No,
moment.
That's what Tony said in this episode. We'll come back to that.
Well, they're at the challenge and they're standing on the water things And I think, I don't remember the exact order, but Sarah looks at Sophie and goes, good job, Sophie. And Sophie looks at Kim and goes, good job, Kim. And then Kim looks at Ben or Adam and just does this and just thank you back to Sophie. Mm-hmm. It's like these three powerful women who, you're right, they do form this triangle of power and advantages.
Yeah, they're all insulated by advantages. And it's really unusual in a season for, you know, the women hold all the advantages, with the exception of Jeremy has his peace out advantage.
My two winners picks coming into the season before anything happened were Denise and Sophie.
Yeah.
So it is, I do feel like they're living up to that, hyper intelligent, powerful, but also not showboaty reputation reason I wanted to put my money on these ladies in the beginning.
So what's going to be hard for them to untangle then in the voting blob is, say, Sophie and Sarah say, hey, we want to blindside Tyson tonight. Well, you got to get that past Kim. Kim doesn't want to blindside Tyson.
Tyson's on her side. This is a very intertwined group, and I think Tyson is a fascinating, amazing character. I mean, we saw the last Edge of Extinction, Rick Devens almost win. And so I assumed on an all-winner season, someone who spent time with the jury, bonded with the jury, and came back in the game, you assume the Rick Devens role, everyone, especially in all-winner season, would be super, we got to get him out. And he even said when he came back, it's their mistake for not voting me out immediately anytime I'm in the game. And so I think to Tyson's credit, he also is doing a great job of fighting against his own reputation, the Rick Devens ghost. But I don't know. I think when it does break, it's going to get really messy because this episode, the tribal was tense, but they all seemed on the same page about Adam.
Yes.
But it's like, it's about to get messy.
And the other thing that's interesting about this, if we're talking about like, where is it Kim and Sarah and Sophie sort of like that, they're the triangle that's in the middle, but you have then the people that are on the outside are those guys that we're talking about that are the lions, where you have Tyson and Jeremy and also Ben and Tony, who are on the outside of that. And then, so if either side wants to get rid of the other guys, are the guys going to be on board with, say, like if Kim decides, okay, this is the round to get rid of Ben, will Jeremy and or Tyson be on board with that to go along with that plan? And then you have Nick and Michelle, who are sort of just waiting for anybody to pick them up if they want to go ahead and, break off. They have no loyalty to anybody that's left in the game. So,
I mean, I think it's going to be a very emotional breaking of an alliance. I also think it's just so funny. I feel like Tony and Jeremy, especially Tony, has done this amazing job. And I don't know if I credit how well Tony's doing a little bit to how poorly he did in Game Changers.
Yeah.
Where instead of coming right off of Cagayan, he, played just as hard in Game Changers and was such a big target, got voted out. And to his credit this time, I mean, he has completely changed his game in terms of how he's approaching people and what he's doing. And
Game Changers was the game changer for him.
Game Changers was the game changer. I also just think you don't think before the season you would necessarily be talking about Tony as a potential winner.
No, he'd be long gone.
But he's done such a good job. I think it's going to be really messy. It seems like it's going to be a mess.
Yeah. You want to talk a little bit more about Tony? Let me play you a voicemail here from one of our listeners, Jared.
Hey, Rob, this is Jared from Seattle. Can you please discuss Tony's pronunciation of the word moment?
Oh,
that's all.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. We'll go into that. I thought I had a game question queued up about Tony. Let's talk about that. But this was another one of my favorite moments from the episode. This is Tony talking about how he was upset. He thought Sarah made a mistake.
Wow. Sarah got caught up in the moment. And that one moment on Survivor is what costs you the game sometimes when you can't get out of that emotional, realistic, humane moment.
Did you ever have a time on Survivor, Hannah, when you were not able to get out of that humane, emotional moment?
Moment?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I think I tried really hard to build really deep personal relationships and then make it strategic, but it's impossible out there to do it all the time. I think that you just, you know, all you're doing all day is talking to these people. You don't have your Zoom, you don't have your computers, your phones. And so, of course, you're going to react emotionally sometimes, a lot of the time. I am very curious if I just, I believe Sarah, since she said it in a confessional, that she had a humane moment. But I also wonder what percentage was also strategic.
Yeah.
Because this aligns with Sarah's game.
Yes. Yeah. Let's actually segue to Sarah, because I would like to talk about this a little bit more in terms of Sarah gave up her reward to Nick because he got blindsided, and also he got married, and it was his birthday, and also a bunch of things, a bunch of reasons that ended
so
up
many
aligning.
Reasons. So many. I know Rodney's got to be so pissed.
Rodney. I think
who didn't get taken on the reward on his birthday.
On his actual birthday. I believe this was the day after his birthday also for Nick. Okay. So here's a question that comes to us from Kiana. I thought this was a really good question.
Kiana.
Really
hey,
good,
Kiana.
Really good take on this. Here is Kiana.
Hi, Rob and Hannah. This is Kiana from California, and I'm calling in defense of Sarah's move to give up a reward to Nick. In the past in Survivor, we've saw survivors use this opportunity of losing a reward to use their saltiness to band together and form a new alliance. We saw Tyson talk about this in a secret scene, and we saw Jeremy mention that he wanted to talk to Nick, who was on the bottom, in a confessional. If you look at the people who are not going to go on the reward, there are a lot of the people who are not in Sarah's alliance. Jeremy, Denise, and maybe even Tyson. By giving Nick the reward, she stopped the opportunity that Jeremy had to talk to Nick and maybe form an alliance against the woman and Sarah's immediate alliances. So in my opinion, this is actually a good move. What do you guys think? Thanks.
Okay.
An intelligent question.
Yeah, this was really, really great.
That's brilliant.
So tying back to what we were talking about, so the people that were going on the reward would have been Sophie, Kim, Ben, and Michelle with Sarah.
Sarah
is already great with Sophie, with Ben, with Kim. Was Sarah afraid of going on this reward and then leaving Nick alone with Jeremy, Denise, Tyson, and Tony potentially to flip things around?
And Adam
also.
I think because Sarah has shown that her pattern is being hyper intelligent and perceptive to things like this, I think absolutely that's a possibility. And the fact that Adam later targets her in the episode, if he had had a very angry, salty Nick, and we were shown that Nick was very angry, he may have been more successful if Nick had angrily been on the losing tribe.
And Jeremy and Denise, who are not part of what she's doing, and then also Jeremy also had Wendell taken out of the game from him in the last episode. Actually, this is the thing that makes the most sense, and actually from Sarah's perspective is actually maybe a pretty good move to, okay, I'm going to win favor from Nick. I'm also going to, and he's not going to be able to do anything because my allies are all over there. I'm going to be able to get back over there and be able to shut down anything that Nick is trying to get off the ground with Adam and Jeremy and Denise and maybe Tyson, who we don't know necessarily if you're Sarah, where his head is at since he came back from the edge. So that's actually, I have to give Kiana a lot of credit. I think that's a really good theory.
Brilliant take. I didn't even think of a theory like that. The most I thought was, like you gain favor with someone who you might eventually put on the jury or want to work with, but that's a much deeper take. I have actually similar questions about Michelle's decision later, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but what a brilliant angle. And I hope Sarah was thinking that because it's so smart. And if she wasn't, I feel like Kiana could.
She should apply. She should apply.
I think Kiana.
I bet that's what it was. Because it didn't.
That's honestly so smart.
It doesn't make any sense that she would be so transparent of, okay, well, then that I'm going to necessarily do this because, oh, Nick will be snowed by what I do this. And then it didn't make any sense when she also said that, oh, I was just, this was just a human moment and something that I was just being so nice to Nick because he got married.
The
this
only
year.
Reason I slightly believe that that was part of it was because she said it in a confessional, which is mm-hmm. would be her chance to let us know if it was strategic or emotional. But I think it can be both. I think that it can be an emotional wanting to give him something. But also, I honestly, this makes perfect sense. And I could see, even if she doesn't consciously think that, subconsciously, she could look over at the losers and realize that. I mean, Sarah has proven to be a hyper-intelligent player. And so I think that's totally possible. And Kiana, if I ever go back, you are going to coach me before I go.
And don't forget also, she just came out of the situation where Boston Rob tried to use the buddy system on steroids on her, where, hey, right. the only way to get this plan not to happen is I have to like sit and watch everybody that I'm worried about. So I think it would be also a smart move on her part to do that. Okay. Go ahead.
No, I think that looking at it from all angles is important. I mean, I had a question about when Michelle, I mean, took the obviously overpriced flip mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
To me, there was a small part of me that wondered, if you reject that coin thing from the edge, are you starving the jury? Like, by giving them four coins, you're feeding the jury. They have a happy moment with peanut butter and yogurt, as we saw in the secret scene. So I mean, that obviously wasn't shown, and I'm sure we'll talk about the Michelle thing later, but a part of me thought, what happens if you reject deals from the edge? Do you start pissing off the jury who just like was going to get food and now is mm-hmm. not? Was that part of Michelle's thought process? Because four coins was a lot for that.
That was a lot.
Well, for the flip, flip a coin.
Okay, all right. Well, then let's talk about this. And since we're here, let's talk about this. And let me bring in a question from Derek. Has a question about Michelle's
Ooh, hey, Derek.
Choice. Okay, here's Derek L.
Derek L.
Hey, Rob and Hannah. This is Derek from Nashville. I have a two-part question. I was thinking a lot about whether or not it was smart for Michelle to give up all four of her fire tokens for that advantage. And I'm wondering, don't the other players know she has four fire tokens? And if so, what happens if they try to barter with her in the future, or if they all try to compile their tokens and she has to admit that she no longer has any? Like, isn't that going to be an issue? Aren't they going to know she has an advantage? And if so, is that bad, or is getting the advantage worth the cost of that? What do you think? And the second part of my question, because I was having this inner dialogue, I realized I was saying fire tokens a lot, and it just made me wonder, why are they called fire tokens? Do you think there's anything to that? Like, they could have been called Ooh. War tokens or island tokens or power tokens. I'm wondering if this will come into play during the fire making challenge. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it. What do you think?
Okay.
What if you get matches at fire or something? You get like easier time building fires because of your token.
I don't know. I don't know if there's any connection with the
thanks, Derek,
with the fire
for the question.
Making. Yeah.
From Nashville.
So, yeah, it was very overpriced. But,
it was overpriced.
Michelle has her back up against the wall. It's also not even a real idol. It's a 50-50. I don't know which part of this you want to explore. Do you feel like that the fire tokens, like, is it just going to be that we're going to see better and better things come in from the Edge of Extinction, and that's what the fire tokens are going to ultimately, that's what they're going to be for?
That is a question I've had. Is it just things sent from the edge, or is there going to come out like some sort of survivor auction, but with fire tokens, where you might get the chance to buy things yourself in the game? Personally, and it's so easy to say this as a viewer from home and not Michelle, who's just gotten blindsided, but I mean, it felt so overpriced. I mean, for an idol, it would have been overpriced, but for a 50-50 switch, I mean, and that's part credit to Parvati for, sending it to someone. When they said we're going to charge her four tokens, I thought no way for this. You know, Michelle has just been through a lot. And I think as an audience, it's easy to say it was overpriced, but maybe Michelle will be on the block she'll flip it and save herself. And everyone who said it was overpriced will look like fools. The real mystery and the reason I think it was truly overpriced is we really don't know what's coming. We don't know how these fire tokens are going to play out beyond things being sent from the edge. So I think having tokens seems like a huge advantage. I think it seemed a little overpriced.
Also, that are we sure that the people that have the most fire tokens, like that we talked about this earlier in the season, like, hey, fire tokens are social currency. So the person that's playing the best is going to have the most fire tokens, but is that necessarily the case? If I look at the fire token leaderboard,
here's
Denise. Denise has, you know, Michelle coming into this week had 4 fire tokens. Hard to say Michelle's played the best game that she had. She was just friends with the most people that got voted out, and maybe had the least to do with the people who were voted out getting voted out. I mean, is this another situation where is it like that? Hey, you're friends with the most people that got voted out, and so you're rewarded with their fire tokens.
You were about to say, how many does Denise have?
Well, so Denise has 3. Denise is the leader. And so she has 3, but Nick has 3. Hard to say that Nick has been playing the best game this season.
It's really interesting.
So should he be rewarded for advantages? Because
So that's a good question. I don't necessarily think the most fire tokens means you're playing the best game. I do think it
does. But you're in the best position to get maybe super powerful advantages at the end of the game.
Well, here's the thing. I do think I can't believe I'm talking seriously about fire tokens, but one thing that I like about it is there is an element that is very true to Survivor about this, which is at the end of the game, 3 people ask the jury for votes. And you could say a very similar thing about jury votes. Are they just, oh, they had the least to do with this person getting voted out, or do they have the most friends on the jury? Like, it really aligns with the core concept of Survivor.
Fair.
These fire tokens. I would defend the fire tokens in saying that, that it, again, not necessarily best game, but, and I also, I kind of, and this is from someone who never won an immunity challenge. I kind of like that you get a little reward for winning the challenge. Kim almost forgot to grab hers.
Yes. That makes more sense to me in some ways.
I like the bequeath thing. Again, I would say because it aligns with the core concept of Survivor is you have to ask the people you voted out, or maybe it's better that you didn't vote them out, for something. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it's fire tokens.
So should the players be looking more at this in terms of, like, I've been talking a lot about Michelle and her 4 fire tokens. Like, would Michelle have been better served, for instance, to say, to go to Sophie or to Sarah and say, hey, look, I need to be safe right now. I'll give you a fire token every round. Every round you keep me safe. And at the same time, emptying out her purse and maybe, as her fortune says, to bring happiness and say, look, I have no fire tokens. Makes no sense to vote me out. Nick's got 3. Denise has 3. Vote them out. Somebody's getting fire tokens here if you vote them out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Because other than, I guess, Michelle giving a token to Wendell, we haven't really seen people a ton bartering with fire tokens. Yes.
Sandra did it with Denise, and Yule was trying to do it. I just feel
and
like...
And it burned Sandra because Sandra requested a fire token after the vote. And so Denise thought, I want to save my fire token. So I'm actually going to vote this person out so I don't have to piss someone off and give them the token. I feel like with Michelle specifically, to answer your question, as much as she's considered right now an easy vote because she's outside of the 8, it doesn't seem like her name has been coming up.
No.
To the point where she would feel the need to like promise fire tokens.
But she still felt the need to spend 4 fire tokens on a 50-50 advantage.
For the future, I think that she doesn't feel like right. From my understanding, it didn't feel like she felt like there were some people ahead of her in line. So that almost it was better to get an advantage for a future thing down the line when she felt she might be in trouble versus she's not the first head to be guillotined. I don't know why I felt the need to make it that violent.
That's fine.
I'm really interested to circle back to the question, why is it called fire tokens? What is going to shift? And is there going to be a shift in which the edge people aren't the only people in control of offering advantages with these tokens? Like, will there be something? And yeah.
Yeah. What I'm worried about here as we're talking about this is that this idea, we have all these fire tokens in the game. Well, the fire tokens ultimately are going to turn into advantages. Wasn't the lesson from Game Changers and even what happened with Janet at the end of last season, do we want a lot of idols and advantages being thrown into the game at the very late stages?
Yeah. If someone we love gets Sereed, we're going to hate it, right?
Yeah. I feel like that we're sort of inviting an advantage get in by having, you know, basically like the fire tokens are going to either be, you know, pooling up or I feel like that there's going to be a lot of advantages sent into the game here at the late stages.
Well, you and I both spoke to Probst. Yes. We both.
You were part of that. You heard when he wasn't thrilled.
He's not. You know, you and I both approached Probst with a similar question, which is, listen, there's been a lot of advantages, and I think Probst is defensive of that a bit. And I think that the fact that there is an edge of extinction, a currency, all these advantages. Yeah. I think he really loves all this. And I think that we're not necessarily going to see, we might see the edge go away for a bit. I think that less advantages are not necessarily something we're going to see. I am worried. I mean, we already have so many. We have a steal of vote. We have two idols. We have a flipping 50, of a coin.
Idol. Yeah.
At what point is everyone going to have
too many things?
Too many things, and then it becomes a game of Russian roulette of who's going to end up without the thing that everyone else has.
Yeah.
The fact that we are talking to each other seriously about fire token currency.
I don't mind the fire token idea. I do think that there are some cool ideas that could come out of the fire
tokens. I thought it was more fun than I initially thought it'd be.
Yeah. My concern is with the edge of extinction and then bartering and people out of the game trading it for, you know, let me jack up the price because I want to buy peanut butter on the edge of extinction. That stuff is getting a little too crazy. I do think that there's some really fun stuff that could potentially come out of if Nick says, hey, I have three fire tokens, you know, can you keep me safe this week? Would that work? And I think that stuff, like the currency in the game, like I think that's I'd rather see more of that than say, okay, well, let me spend my three fire tokens on like a magic bullet and then nobody can get me this week. I'd rather see him try to like negotiate and leverage and see, you know, who he can make a deal with.
I would love that too. I think Sandra had a fun idea. It was just executed so that it benefited Denise to vote her out. Yeah. I think that would be a lot more fun. Oh no, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh no.
That's okay.
It was a rare moment where I had something to say and then fire token. What were you just saying?
Advantages, edge of extinction, all that stuff. So Michelle needed some extra, some help to make this decision.
Oh, I remember.
Yes.
Sorry. The interesting thing about the fire tokens too is it almost messed up the whole idea of edge of extinction and coming back, because it almost seems like in that comeback challenge that it was beneficial to have been voted out earlier.
Certainly, yeah.
Because you could get more fire tokens. I thought I was shocked that Natalie didn't buy two advantages in the challenge versus, and then rely on the fact that she had allies in the game and she's not like Boston Rob with the statue head, and try using all her fire tokens possible to get back in the game, that instead she got an idol, which evened the playing field a little bit. But it was almost a thing of, because she was voted out first and fire tokens are a thing, it almost propelled her in. And so fire tokens, while great, has already makes the edge of extinction wonky. That was the sort of side thought, but, yeah, I would love to see a more, you know, I have value because I have three fire tokens. I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, Nick, who, you know, thought he was going home, at least we were shown him saying, it's me. You're right. Like, he's got three tokens. I mean, could he say, I'll give it to you, and if you vote me out, I'll give it to your enemy? I mean,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all those things would be interesting.
That's a great point.
In terms of like learning about how they work, I think that there is more here with the fire tokens. So I don't want to say like everything is bad. I think that they could do stuff with the fire tokens. But so Michelle needed to make a decision, and she was very influenced by the Chinese lunch that they got to have. And the fortune cookies played a big part in all of that. Hannah, did you ever think back to your Survivor experience? And was there a fortune cookie fortune that you could have read that would have maybe given you the advice that you needed in your Survivor game?
Yeah, probably to remember the ideas you knew before the game started.
Mm-hmm. Listen to Hamilton.
Things like gender and perception that I was thinking about so much before the game started and had such a good, I feel like grasp on. And then when you're in it, you're so overwhelmed and different people you're being told are perceived different ways. And so you go in one direction where I think that if I...
Those wouldn't be very fun fortunes to open though.
No, it would have been a miserable fortune, but it would have been like, center yourself back to what you knew before you were hungry and starving. Oh, it would have been a very sad fortune cookie. to honestly answer your question, something like that. Or just like chin up gal.
Yeah. Have you considered, should we go into business and write some more practical fortunes for people in fortune cookies?
Let's do it. I think don't text your ex.
Yes. Don't kick it.
Quarantine isn't an excuse for that. Don't kick it with your ex. Mm-hmm. Just everyone's now is like, wash your hands, stay inside.
Wash your hands for 20 seconds. That's right. Those are all good. Those are all good ones.
It would be really, really funny if production specifically gave a fortune to each player that was just too specific to what they needed to hear. Mm-hmm. That would have been really fun. Yes. I would have liked to see that.
Well, can you help write some specific fortune cookies for players that are in the game? Trevor Chong says, if you could write a fortune cookie to all of the players in the game, what would you write and what would they say? Do you have any fortune cookies that you would send to a player?
That's a great question, Trevor. I mean, I feel like Tony has given himself this fortune cookie
all
game.
He's so wise in the game that he's the voice of reason.
I know. I feel like Tony gave himself the fortune cookie of take a breath, calm down, and then almost like in small letters, act normal. Like
live he's just in the moment. Yeah.
Live in the moment. Who would you send one to? If you could choose any player to send a fortune cookie, which left and who would it be?
I would say to Ben, never forget your frenemy, Adam Klein.
I mean, I feel like Ben could have used a fortune that look to the people who like.
Yeah, time to look for an idol yourself, Ben.
Or like join the hyenas. I feel like the lions are doing a good job of making Ben feel liony, and he is. He's great. I also think I think a voice from the outside would be helpful. Who would I?
So. Let me play for you the fortune cookies that they got this week. And you tell me if these were especially Survivor-focused fortune cookies, okay?
Okay.
All right. Here are the fortune cookies that we heard this week.
Everyone go around.
Your skill will accomplish what the force of many others cannot.
Okay. Your skill will accomplish what the force of others may not. For Ben.
So for Ben, again, I think that this fortune was trying to remind him that he has idol finding skills.
Yes.
And he doesn't need to go to the end with pure force. Mm-hmm. It's also a reminder to him that while he is part lion, he's also probably part hyena in the way he approached his season with all the titles and things. And maybe it was trying to tell him, like, you know, work with the hyenas a little more. Yeah, I think it's a combo of those two things. Yeah. It's like, remember your hyena side. And also maybe it's been fascinating to watch Ben say, I don't want to find idols.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't want it. That's bad. That's bad. And people vote him out. Also, that Ben's fortune elicits a giggle from Nick, which is adorable. Listen to Nick's reaction to Ben's fortune.
Everyone can go around.
Your skill will accomplish what the force of many others cannot.
Mm. Oh my gosh. You're right. That wasn't good. Yeah, I love too how they forced themselves to read it aloud in case one was an idle clue or an advantage.
Maybe. Okay. I think
that's cute.
So listen to this next one, because this is interesting too.
Make changes for the better.
Okay.
Wait, who was that?
That was Sophie's. This is
changes for the better.
Listen again. This is okay, Sophie's. Sophie's fortune.
You make changes for the better.
Okay, is it? Wait. Make changes for the butter. Was that the fortune?
You will make changes for the butter.
You will make changes for the butter. That says a lot. I think what it's saying is like, things you know, the jar of peanut butter is coming to pursue.
Oh, that's what it was. And I know it says better. I know it says better, but this is another weird pronunciation.
You will make changes for the better?
For the butter. I think you're
for the butter. Make changes for the butter.
She had like a mouthful of food when she said it.
Yeah. Okay. And then we get to the Michelle ones, which it seems like, I'm not sure if this was like weirdly edited where it seemed like that Michelle gets two in a row here.
Why did she get two? Okay, let's hear it again.
We didn't hear Kim, we didn't hear a fortune for Nick's fortune, but then we get two Michelles.
As the purse is emptied, the heart is filled.
Okay, as the purse is emptied, the heart is filled.
Did Harvey write that?
Yeah, maybe.
To send to her?
Yeah, Hannah, that seemed like oddly specific.
It was so on the nose that it's just so strange.
Yeah.
Production obviously is writing these. We're not going to pretend the Survivor gods aren't. They can't have Michelle open it up. But if anyone hears, as the purse is empty, the heart is filled, it is encouraging people to do something with their tokens, right?
And it is a season where they have like that giant purse also.
They have a giant purse?
Yeah, they have like a bag. Like it's very much like a...
Did anyone buy tarp for the tribe? Did anyone spend their token?
But Hannah, do you subscribe to that advice? As the purse is emptied, is the heart filled?
I'm a frugal Jew, so no.
So you don't believe that?
I think that sometimes...
Is the key to happiness blowing all your money?
Listen, I didn't win the million. I don't have a purse to blow.
Mm-hmm. I've heard money can't buy happiness.
I heard that there's a certain amount of money that if you have that amount, you're happier. But if you go above it, it doesn't necessarily mean you're happy. I think that treating yourself and indulging sometimes without guilt is something that I could work on.
Mm-hmm.
As the purse is empty, the heart is filled. I also think at times when when you make money and you give it to good causes, that also,
Like poverty. Yeah.
Like give it to the people on the edge.
Take all your money and then give it away to poverty.
Poverty. As the purse is empty, the heart is filled. Mm-hmm. Does that mean it's stressful to have money?
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you agree? Do you agree with the fortune?
I don't know. I wouldn't know, Hannah.
I guess we're two people who don't empty our purses.
Maybe my heart is too full. Maybe that's it.
Oh man.
Yeah. All right. And then one more from Michelle.
All right. Okay. Don't be afraid to take that big step.
Don't be afraid to take that big step, Michelle. Don't be afraid
this
to do
one,
it.
I agree with this one more.
Yes. Okay.
That a lot of Survivor players tend to regret the swings and the steps they didn't take versus regret trying. Also, you know, maybe this is about her and Wendell. Maybe Wendell.
Don't be afraid to take that next step. The purse is empty. The heart is filled.
It's just, it was
buy Wendell a gift.
It's just the funny thing. It was so on the nose. It may as well have said, when poverty sends you an advantage, take it no matter what the cost. Yeah. You'll be happy.
Even like, if it's a bad advantage.
Even if it's a bad advantage that costs a bazillion dollars, like, go for it.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I wish almost that it was that specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should have let Parvati write the fortunes like Jamal last season with the going to the Robin Sandra Island. All right, I have something that I've really been waiting to talk to you about.
Okay.
Let's bring in a voicemail for you from our good friend, Kirsten McInnes.
Kirsten.
Hey, Rob and Hannah, it is Kirsten here, and I am calling actually to ask about all these new lyrics to that Winners at War song.
Yeah.
We received the lyrics, just the words Winners at War, they're coming for you, get ready for the storm or the thunder, something with storms and thunder. I would be lying if I said I remembered. And so I was just hoping that we could get the definitive power ranking of these lyrics from you, as well as the discussion of, you know, how that song would actually all come together if it was one single. So thanks. Would love to hear your thoughts. Stay safe. Bye.
Okay.
I love this. Is it one single, is it like a cohesive album?
Well, let's talk about all the lyrics that are there. I know you. Yes. This is your favorite song, and so I also just want to say that I've known Kirsten McInnes easily 4 years,
yes,
if it's a day, and I believe this is the first voicemail she's ever sent into the Survivor feedback
Woo!
Show.
Maybe she I love fact that the pop that. The pop songs have pushed her into the to the voicemail. Well, Kirsten, thank you so much for calling in and asking about my favorite thing this season,
your favorite
soundtrack.
Song. Okay. Okay. So Kirsten wants us to power rank all of the lyrics. So Scott Chernoff also said, is it true that Hannah is the lead vocalist who sings all the totally rockin' and not at all annoying pop songs on Survivor this season? I better get ready because her answer is coming for me. You know, it's not you that sang this song, right?
It would have had to be really auto-tuned since I'm very tone-deaf.
Okay. Now, a lot of people have said, okay, oh, this is Sia who sings this song. Hannah, do you remember the origin story for this song?
No.
Okay,
so if you want to tell me, I'd love
to
hear.
Actually, let me refresh your memory because you and I actually heard it from the horse's mouth himself. Jeff Probst. Jeff Probst was talking the night that you and I mentioned when we got to go talk to him on the red carpet. We went to go see a screening of the 2-hour premiere of Survivor Winners at War. And Jeff Probst actually talked about that some things that they were going to be playing with the format of Survivor.
I remember
and these
this,
are the
yeah.
things, the kinds of things they can do in their 40th season and their 20th year. And so a lot of people have asked for the, what is this song? Where did it come from? And so we actually pulled the clip from that night, courtesy of the Dalton Ross panel that was hosted that night that we went to at the Arclight Theater, where Hannah and I were in attendance. Here is Jeff explaining the origin story of how this came to be, and it's definitely interesting. Okay, here's Jeff talking a little bit about some of the different things that they've done over the years as they decide to play with their own format on Survivor.
And, you know, a lot of storytellers are here tonight. We get inspired by, like, there was a show, there was a great documentary on I can't remember what it's called. What was that HBO documentary, Matt?
The Defiant Ones.
The Defiant Ones. And they did something in there where they, just about the way they were cutting it, and I called Matt, I go, you know, we could break our own mold. We don't have to stay in the linear time. And, you know, so the editors start playing with, what if we don't show somebody find an idol? What if we tell you they found it, and then we show you a flashback? So we're still going to show you, but we're going to, and that's, we're doing that now with music. We just cut something in episode 4. Well, we started with this woman. You better get ready. This is how, okay, my son is here right now, and this is how fun Survivor is. Somebody can have an idea on our show. Like, I was in my car, and I thought, I want to hear like a Cajun grandma narrate every episode. The original idea was, what if at the beginning of every episode, somebody said once upon a time, whatever it meant, but it was kind of once upon a time.
Okay, can I just, we're going to come back to that.
Can we pause at Cajun Grandma? Can we go,
where did we stall out?
I don't remember that.
Where did we stall out on getting a Cajun Grandma to narrate every episode?
I'm sorry, I don't remember him. I don't remember his desire to have a Cajun Grandma. Guys, Jeff.
What would that sound like if a Cajun grandma was narrating previously on Survivor?
I'm not doing this voice. This is just going to lead us into a bad place. I'm Googling Cajun grandma to see what Jeff is imagining.
I got a big pot of jambalaya on the fire.
This is what comes up on Cajun Grandma. This is who Jeff wants. I'm sure
my grandson Russell Hanson, he played Survivor a long time ago, you see.
I can't believe he wants a cage. Guys, if you think that all the advantages in the game are not what you want, and you're afraid Jeff Probst is having too much control, just be thankful there's not a Cajun grandma narrating, she just found the flip a coin advantage.
Now, and you see, Wendell and Michelle, they had kicked it before the season started, you see. And now Wendell, he's off on the edge of extinction.
Oh my God. I don't remember Probe saying he wanted a Cajun grandma to narrate this show. Oh, I love Probe, but I can't. Oh my gosh. A Cajun grandma.
Now, y'all better get ready, okay? Because the next episode's about to be coming for you.
So I want to hear the rest of this clip, but okay. Can we just say that Probst's dream is very Titanic style, but with a Cajun grandma. We start
narrating
with her looking at the island, throwing a ring into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Not believe that he said that. Oh my gosh, I don't remember that. All right.
Winners at
war. I do remember the editing thing, mm-hmm. which we saw with like Rob finding the fire token.
Yeah, and I think it really came up with Chris Noble and Dominic. Right. I think that was what they're talking about. Where,
but
like,
let's hear the rest of this.
So Jeff wants a Cajun grandma to narrate every episode.
Oh my gosh. Pro,
so I have my little
Jeffrey.
iPhone. You better get ready. They're coming for you. Whatever. Put it in my phone. Send it to a friend of mine who's a big-time music producer and say, do you have any voice, like a woman? She goes, yeah, she's in the studio right now. I could have her put something on an iPhone. An hour later, on my phone, I get back this singer, Maisie, who just sang with Elton John last night. And she's got this incredible voice. You better get ready. I'm like, holy shit. I said, Matt, it's an iPhone. John Hurt, our post-production, can we, and like, cut something in? An hour later, we have a version that's basically that. And we do that on our show all the time. And what's funny I say about my son is he heard me in the kitchen. He's like, are you telling me that's going to be in the show? And I said, well, not my voice, but he's a filmmaker. And what I'm trying to show him is, yeah, just why not?
We are all Jeff's son. We're all, yeah. Really? That's going to be in the show? Yeah.
Cajun girl. Yeah. I mean,
not me singing. But.
So I wanted for my story takeover to have Survivor players singing this song. And in order to tell them what to sing, I sound recorded from an episode one of the singing, and I have it here. What I sent all the people. But the funny thing is, in the episode I sound recorded it from, it just leads up to like Rob tickling Adam awake. Mm-hmm. Like it's nothing strategic, and it's this the.
Keep your eyes open. They're coming for you.
Yeah.
And then it's just it's Rob tickling Adam with a leaf. Oh my gosh.
So guys, Rob is sleeping, okay?
I'm sorry. You know what? None of this matters anymore. I can't get over the fact that he wanted a Cajun grandma to narrate the whole thing.
So we got some new lyrics this week.
Okay.
Here's another lyric from the song. No, hold on. We have.
Come before the storm. Get ready for
Okay, come before the storm. Get ready for the thunder. Is there any truth to the fact that someone was let go that did the music before?
Russ Landau used to be the composer for the Survivor. I think that, I'm not sure, maybe first 20 seasons, he was old school. And then they end up with going new school Survivor music.
Well, first they had middle school.
Then there was middle school, maybe like when Sophie played. Middle school music.
So get ready for the storm. Yeah, wait, say it again. The calm before the storm.
Get ready for the thunder. Yeah. Really,
calm before the storm, get ready for the thunder.
Get ready for the thunder.
I like that. I like that lyric. Winners at war.
The big set piece that we got during the challenge. Let me see if I can play the Winners at War song.
Winners at War.
Yeah. Let me see if I have that whole piece. If not, I will bring up the episode. Here's another piece from the episode. Here is They're Coming For You.
Coming for you. It is a war.
When is it war? Are we for more? When is it war? When is it war? Are we for more? When is it war? They're coming for you.
10 seconds.
Yeah. Okay.
Since the original question was about ranking.
Yeah.
I definitely love this. Winners at war.
They're coming for more. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the what do you call it? Falsetto. Again, I'm tone deaf, guys. But like the winners at war. I think it's really catchy. And in the single, that's definitely the chorus of the song.
Yeah. So winners at war, hungry for more. Is this because they just had a Chinese food reward? Is that what the deal is? That they've eaten Chinese food, but now 30 minutes later, they're hungry for more Chinese food?
Yeah, definitely. Or that they're just lions and hyenas. They're hungry for the kill.
They're ready for the next hunt.
Hungry. Like, it's a lot of animals that like to eat things.
Yeah. Okay. We love this song. We want the whole song to be released.
Yeah, yes.
I really think that the Survivor community, everybody hates the song, but it's like slowly turning into that we hate it so much now that we love it.
For the record, I never hated it.
You love it.
I like when Survivor is unnecessarily weird or funny. I've said it before on the podcast.
We're coming around to it.
I have
syndrome with the song now.
We're stuck at home listening to that song, literally. I really, really like when Survivor is funny and weird, and whether intentionally or not, this is so weird.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been great, and I hope that this is now. Do you hope this song becomes the official theme song to Survivor? Or do you hope that each season has its own
theme song? Each season to build its own song throughout the season.
Okay.
And then release the song at the end of the season. If it's like David versus Goliath, like imagine that. David's Goliath. Like, it would have been so fun.
Yes.
Goliath.
What would the theme song to Millennials versus Gen X have been like?
Jeff Probst once said in a challenge, Gen X, are they on their way out? I think that would have been a lyric. Gen X, are they on their way out? Millennials, can they look up from their phones? That's what Jeff said. So I think that's a lyric.
Would a Cajun grandma sing the song about how she can't relate to her millennial grandson?
Yes, the millennial versus Gen X song would have been all sung from the perspective of the Cajun grandma.
Yes, and then a Cajun. Maybe we have like a Cajun like granddaughter also that like is singing back and forth like a duet.
Yeah, it's a duet. It's like kids versus adults. Guys, I'm really tone deaf. You don't want me singing the. And then at a certain point, it's just like, can the millennials take down David Wright? That's a very out of tune lyric.
Okay. You did very well.
Winners of age. Who will die first?
Oh, no.
Young people or old people, you never know.
I said that. Yeah.
Should war. Yes. Sorry, you asked.
You did it. You answered that. That's on me. That's on me.
I think HHH would have been the funniest song. Hustlers versus healers versus heroes.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been like a country bop.
Oh, country.
I think it's got to be a different. Like this is like really pop. I think we got to have like a rap, a country.
Yeah, so many seasons would have been really good for a theme song like the Survivor, Worlds Apart of No Collar, Blue Collar, White Collar.
What collar are you? Nope.
Yeah. Red, white, or blue. Yeah. Yeah, we got it. We got
it. Wait, did we just create
a new thing?
Song?
A new song. Yeah.
What color are you? Red, white, or blue? Mm-hmm. America. Because that was the
That's right. That's the right. Tribe, that was the tribe name.
Yeah.
Hannah, next week on the show is going to be the loved ones visit.
Let me prep this while you explain.
Yes. So it looks like that next week we're getting like the most supersized loved ones visit that we've ever had. Survivor has been featuring commercials where it looks like the people have like their whole not just a loved ones visit. It's a whole family visit where
their whole town.
Yeah. Everybody's coming out to see the survivors. I mean, we could potentially, not to mention we have 10 players in the game. It looks like we're getting like 3 and 4 people. We could have 42 people on the beach next episode.
I mean, I'm so excited. We've heard about these people's kids all season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so thrilled. I hope it was truly a surprise.
Yeah.
Because imagine if you think you're just getting your one loved one and then all your kids.
Yeah.
I'm ready for some tears, damn it.
Yeah. Because frankly, it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where I would be spending time away from my children. So I'd like to live vicariously through the survivors who are 38 days away from their families at this point.
Would you have wanted your kids out there?
It depends. Was it during the era of social distancing?
Yeah. He's coming. Was it during the year? No, it's in the context of your own season.
Yeah,
would you have liked?
You
wouldn't have had kids.
I'd be like, who is this family? Who are these people? Who do they belong to? Yeah.
So you were saying?
Yes, but Hannah, that we are going to be so lucky to get to see the survivors celebrate their family visit. We have a big.
I'm really jealous. I feel like every season you should have gotten 6 people.
Yes. Yeah. That would have been iconic if we could have seen more people come out for the family visits.
So this is leading to something though.
I have
people that I'm talking to off on the side.
Yes. All right. So you have organized. You have a family visit coming in right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I am quarantined here in Colorado at home, and my parents wanted to say hi to the RHAP listeners.
Okay,
especially mom. So I'm going to take out my headphones so that they can hear.
Okay, all right.
Is that going to work?
I think let's give it a shot. Let's give it a shot.
Okay,
we're trying something.
Okay, so taking out.
We're being experimental. And here comes Hannah's mom.
Okay. This is the first time we've touched each other. Oh,
yes.
This is my dog, Pache.
Okay.
Mom, Liz, remember from the show. And then my dad, he's coming.
Okay. All right. Hannah's mom, what's your name?
Liz.
Liz. Now, Hannah says you actually listen to the podcast.
I listen to it when I go running or when I hike up the mountain every day.
No, wait, Dad, you can stay in.
Yeah, hi, Hannah's dad.
This is my dad, Bob.
Okay.
So I've listened to your podcast every single day.
Yes. And Hannah says you give her a report about Stephen and I thought about things on the Know-It-Alls.
I did. But I like the podcast that I listened to today where you talked about a women's alliance.
Yes. Well, which one was that with Andrea?
With Andrea.
Yes.
I think this is the time for the Women's Alliance.
Okay. Hannah, do you agree with your mom?
I mean, yeah, I'm of the belief that it's always good to.
The problem is that Michelle doesn't seem like that she's working with any of the women.
I'd also say, though, that.
But she's
that
desperate.
She's desperate, yeah.
Desperate. So if Kim were to come to her and talk
Look
to
at
her
my
about
mom.
Women's Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, though, that some of the women. I think Sarah could use Ben. Like, I don't think that I mean, Sarah won against two men. She won against Brad and Troyzan. I think that Sarah could do a similar thing. But also, you know, some of these lionesses having to get out the lions, maybe...
Which we call the middle schoolers, which was a little
middle school era, just like the old the old school people aren't. I'm not saying that they're old.
I think it's when you look at a group of women and call them middle schoolers.
I can talk about the middle school guys too, Jeremy and Tony.
I listened to the whole thing when I hiked up the mountain today and skied down.
So Liz is multitasking, Hannah.
I'm trying to get those miles. Remember the vertical miles? I'm trying to get.
Yes. How many vertical miles?
Less, because she can only do it alone now because we're social distancing. She walks up alone.
Oh.
For people who are about to try to push.
Yeah. Liz, has it been fun to spend so much time with Hannah now?
Well, Hannah was quite good when she first came here. We ate dinner on the stairway because she didn't want to get within 10 feet.
Yes. Okay. That was good. And then you let her come in the house.
We won't go into all the details, but I self-isolated in a room for 15 days before I even.
Yes. Yes. But what is this fun? I bet you never imagined being able to spend this much quality time with Hannah.
Why are you laughing? There are people who are.
No, Hannah is a very, very good sport. She scolded us for going shopping in the grocery store, and now we're in line.
Okay.
They were going too often to the grocery store.
They're going too often, right?
We go into the cart now, and we wipe down the groceries, and we tip very big because there is a whole thing with tipping. But, yeah, they were going quite often.
You know, Liz, you know what they say, that, you know, empty the purse to bring joy to the heart.
Right, and then flip the coin or whatever.
And then flip the coin.
I just have one thing to say. I think the family visit's coming up soon.
Yes, Liz. Yeah.
I just want you to know that in Hannah's season, I actually had an alliance with several of the family members.
Yeah, the family members, I feel like that they always make an alliance. I feel like that a lot of seasons they do this.
Whose family visit was in your alliance?
Actually Adam and Ken.
It mirrored the game. What? Yeah.
It was really funny. It did mirror the game.
Yeah.
And David Wright's dad wouldn't tell us who he was visiting. So we just assumed he was visiting a dog. Everyone else was willing to say who they were visiting. Exactly.
Yes. David Wright's dad was being very cagey.
He was quite cagey.
Not Cajun.
We were willing to, I was going to do the challenge for Hannah. Probes to let me.
If necessary.
She probably could have won it when I couldn't, so it's fair.
Liz, how did you think Adam did this season?
I think he did great. He is a lovely person. And he looked a little bit like Hannah when he was searching around the first time he went to vote. It kind of reminded me of Hannah in the voting.
Oh, so he did it when Hannah was trying to decide who to vote out.
I think he's sweet. He's great. So we all love Adam and our family.
Yes. Liz, did you think it was going to work when he went to go for the idol this week?
No way. No, I thought Probst was.
Well, my mom loves Adam so much. She actually, during the family visit challenge, started rooting for him instead of me. She said, go Adam, because he got stuck under the thing.
He got stuck under the thing, and his brother seemed quite distressed and wanted to talk to him, and then I found out why.
That was a good reason. That was a good a good person to root for. Liz, do you want to see Adam play a third time now?
I know that he'd love to play a third time.
Yes, he loves Survivor.
I don't know that it's healthy for anyone to play a third or fourth, but then again, Tyson and Rob are out there because they did.
Yeah, well, Liz, tell me, would you like to see Hannah go play Survivor again? Was that exciting, or you feel like that she's moved on?
Bobby's gonna...
my dad wants to answer this question.
Okay, Bob is going to answer.
She should play again so I can get to go to the family.
Oh, okay.
That's the only reason.
All right, Hannah, will you go back again so your dad can get a family visit?
Just for that. Then I quit after the family visit.
That could be your strategy. Tell everybody.
I'm not a threat.
I don't even want to be here. I'm only here because my dad didn't get to go on the family visit last time. So that's the thing. I will lay down on the sword after my dad comes for the family visit.
As soon as he comes on screen, I go, okay, I quit. And then I fly back home with him.
No, I actually almost had to be evacuated at the family visit.
Why?
Because I went snorkeling before I went and saw Hannah, and I got bitten by a lot of jellyfish.
Oh, no.
What is it, Dr. Joe? Was that
yeah, Dr. Joe, the handsome Dr. Joe. Yes. She kept, this is why my dad wants to go out there. He wants to meet this Dr. Joe that went to my mom's bungalow.
Hannah, would you have been okay if they told you that Hannah? We're very sorry to tell you that your mom was here, but she has been medically evacuated. Sorry to say that she's fine, but she couldn't make it out for the family visit.
It would have been upsetting, but I would have known that it was true because of my mom.
And they probably would have voted you out. They said, "Oh, what is this? Is this like some sort of Johnny Fairplay situation where that she's lying to everybody?"
Listen, as long as I knew that my mom was being cared for by Dr. Joe, it would have been okay.
Okay.
He was very handsome.
Okay.
Dr. Joe was my therapist. The ad for today was for BetterHelp.
BetterHelp, yeah.
BetterHelp. And Dr. Joe, before each tribal, I would go into the tent and he'd say, "How are you doing physically?"
Mm-hmm.
And I would always try to tell him my problems. And he would always say, "I'm not your therapist, Hannah."
Yeah.
Anyway. Rob, it's very nice.
Yeah, very nice to talk to you. I'm glad that I finally got to place the face. Hannah always tells me that you listen.
She does. She's an avid RHAP listener.
Yeah. Do I get a mug now?
Okay. All right. We'll work on that. We'll work on that.
Okay. It's very nice meeting you. Best to your children. I know it's
yeah. Thank you.
Well, because Nicole works as a nurse.
Nicole is still working as a nurse.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Is she able to stay at your house or?
No, she's fine. She's here. Yeah. We're letting her stay here. We're not making her eat dinner in the stairwell or anything.
Well, good luck.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Liz.
Very nice to meet you. And Patrick's happy to meet you too. They should allow dogs to visit.
Yeah. They've got kids, but no dogs. It's some bullshit.
Yeah. If David Wright's dad was out there to visit a dog, they should let a dog play.
He was cagey. Bye.
Now we've learned that here, I'm going to plug myself back in for the end of this.
Okay. All right. That was so nice.
I'm so glad that my parents could come on the podcast. I was supposed to ask before I forget. Somebody said ask about the $75 patron thing.
I mean, that's a joke that we say that people who are the $75 patrons get to listen to all of the, they basically like get a phone tap into my house. They get to hear the banter that we have before the podcast. But it's not real.
I'm so glad we got to have a family visit in preparation for the family visit.
Okay. Let me see. How about Kristen has a question for you. Putting myself out there for the stupidest question. Hannah, did your glasses drive you nuts when you were out there? I can't imagine wearing them in this heat.
So this is actually a very great question because, I chose not to do contacts because my eyesight's bad, but not like super, super bad. And it was a whole thing. We'd have to put my glasses at the end of challenges, like at the puzzle section, because I wouldn't wear them for the main thing. And then I'd get to the end and wear them. There was another challenge. The millennials were like, Hannah can't do it because she wears glasses, which was silly. But the biggest thing about my glasses is that I didn't have glasses cleaner and I didn't think I was allowed to. And then I get to the merge and I find out that Jessica Lewis had glasses cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
She started cleaning my glasses for me. And I asked production, can I get some glasses cleaner? They said no. And then finally I went to production and I said, if you don't give me glasses cleaner, I'm never going to vote Jessica out because I can only see with Jessica. And so the next day I had glasses cleaner.
Oh, no.
So they were annoying, but once I threatened production with Jessica's glasses, with never voting Jessica out, I got the glasses cleaner I needed. And it was
this, were you going to vote her out? Was this like an Angelina jacket caper where you were going to vote out Jessica solely to get her glasses cleaner?
Weirdly, it was the exact opposite. I told production, I'll never vote her out.
Okay.
Because I need her. Because only she can give me the glasses cleaner every day. And I guess production, really wanted Jessica out there. They didn't want the game to be influenced. They didn't want my exit press to say, like Jessica won because of her glasses.
I took her to the final three because she's the only person that could clean my glasses.
Who could clean my glasses.
Yes.
But Jessica also had contacts, which is part of, I believe to be part of her eye situation on my season.
Yes, I think
so. There are pros and cons. Great question, Mom. Okay. I don't doubt yourself.
And then I have a question for you that is more of a statement from May from Canada. Just wanted to say that I admire Hannah. Underneath the silly humor is a gentle message of kindness. I've never met her, but she seems so sweet, and she takes so much crap online for no reason. She was a finalist.
Aw, thank you.
Wasn't that nice?
That was super nice. I will clarify, since I know I got so boxy earlier, 95% of the fans and everyone are so great and so nice. And especially the RHAP community has been so awesome. There's so many things to be angry about in the world. And I can send you a list of things to be angry about. But I think there's a difference between analyzing and making jokes and commenting and sending people hate. And I just think that's never necessary to reality show contestants who, unless they're doing damage to the world as a reality star contestant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Formerly or not.
Okay. Hannah, I'm just looking at your Twitter to see what
your Twitter.
You're,
oh no!
Yeah, what are you talking about? Let's see.
What am I talking about on Twitter?
Yeah.
You might have to scroll down to when
you said best advice from a friend recently. Everybody's struggling. You're not alone. Even people baking so much bread, especially the people baking endless bread. Yeah, it's hard to get all the supplies to bake bread.
It's really hard to get the supplies to bake bread. No, I was just talking to a friend. And like I said earlier, no one is killing it all the time. And social media can be so performative. So make sure you understand that, like, you're not alone in that.
Yeah. Have you baked anything? Do you have any hobbies that you're practicing?
I definitely learned how to turn off and on an oven. So I can do that now. I have not baked any bread.
Yeah. What do you do to pass the time then?
I have been, pitching articles. I have writing things that I have to do. I get to spend time with the lovely family you just met. Colorado, there's not a ton of people. And so I went for a run. And going for a run in a solo run for everyone. And this has been approved by the CDC. It's very hard at this altitude. So I figure if I can maybe get in running shape here when this is lifted, if I get to go back to LA, I'll run a marathon. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only possibility. I've also been taking these amazing classes. Adam's girlfriend, Kaylee Maurer, teaches classes through Zoom called Maurer Power Fit. And she does ab workouts, leg workouts. She even does beginner handstands. So yes. I've been doing those almost every day. And honestly, everyone should go check those out too.
Yes.
Because those are awesome. Listen, we complimented and critiqued Adam, but we're also promoting his girlfriend's site.
Yes. Do you remember the time that, me and you and Adam's girlfriend, and then, that there was some guy and you told him that you were a famous gymnast?
I do remember that. So for the context, for those listening, so Kaylee, Adam's awesome girlfriend. We were at a Christmas party, I believe.
No, Adam was leaving to go to live in Virgin Islands. Again, a classic Adam move of like he was going to go live on a boat and go play poker.
But we were at a party and Adam's girlfriend, Kaylee, is a gymnast. And
she makes incredible videos on TikTok.
Yeah, she's a TikTok influencer. Look, I'm hip to what the kid, thanks to Adam and his girlfriend, I'm hip to what TikTok is. But she's a gymnast and her roommate, Kellyanne, also a gymnast. And this guy was asking them about being gymnasts. So I decided to tell this man that I was an Olympic gymnast who had trained them, and he fully believed me. And Rob was there.
You were such a good improviser that this guy was like on board. And then, but he kept asking like more probing questions. And then I was watching you just like have to shovel like deeper and deeper where you told him.
I thought the more ridiculous I got, at some point he would laugh and realize I was lying. But yeah. The more ridiculous I got, the more he believed me. So then you told him
that you were training for the Olympics and he wanted to see video of
my Instagram
floor routine. Yeah.
Yeah. I got very deep into this whole, Rob was there. Rob also, I believe this is the first night you ever made a TikTok as well.
Yeah. I think it's the only one I ever made.
But yes, I was the Olympic gymnast who had trained Kaylee and Kellyanne. And, you know, you see me and you think
this
Olympic
guy would not
gymnast.
Drop
it. Wasn't a huge
jump. Yeah,
he would not. And he followed me around the party too, asking more questions. It's like, once you tell someone you're an Olympic gymnast, they'll follow you around a party. Yeah. It was,
he was very interested in hearing more of your, very interesting life story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my fake life story was,
dude, you should tell the real one next time.
It was pretty amazing. No, you know what? I think I'd rather make up a story about myself every party I go to.
Yeah. And I don't know how this didn't come up, but you recently wrote a story for menshealth.com.
Yes, let's talk about it.
And you interviewed survivors about their poop stories?
Yes. So the initial pitch to Men's Health was, you know, we're living in a world where toilet paper is in high demand. And some people are having to experience not having toilet paper for the first time. So I said, let's interview a bunch of survivor players who have done toilet paperless poops. A
lot of survivors brag on Facebook about how, hey, I don't need toilet paper.
Yeah. I'm curious if they're still not using toilet paper, but I was so thankful for the people. It was Kara K, Rick Devins.
Can you talk us through your process in terms
Andrea,
of like the
oh,
people
not
that
Andrea.
The people that you Troy reached
Zan
out to?
Troy Zan and Elaine. Yes, like, I can talk. Yeah.
How did you reach out? Because you didn't reach out to me. That you something about me, I guess, gave you the vibe. Like, I bet Rob doesn't have any good poop stories. I have a hit list of people I'm gonna hit.
So, I would first say that something really funny I was telling Lauren from last season. I said, listen, I could never play again because I, you know, the Poker Alliance got in trouble. I'm so obvious about who I'm friends with. I just call them for Men's Health stories. Mm-hmm. But this was the first story where I got a few no's for the first time. I've done a couple of these Men's Health stories, some about battle injuries, after Survivor, others about, you know, behind the scenes moments. But yeah, this poop article had to be a very specific group of people. So I was not just who has good poop stories, but who would be down to talk about poop.
Mm-hmm.
I knew right away that Zeke would talk about poop, yeah, just knowing him. I thought Elaine, and I correctly thought, Elaine was not someone I had chatted with before, but I just thought, you know,
you saw Elaine and you said, bingo.
I said that girl's got a funny poop story.
Bet she's got a great poop story.
Yeah. And I just went with the people who I just went with my gut. Literally.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Did you have a poop story that you would like to tell now? Is there something that you're like, oh, if Hannah had called me?
No, not particularly. I don't think I have any great ones.
I actually, Aubrey, I hope she's okay with me saying this, reached out after and told, it was like, I actually had a poop story. She said after she found her idol in Edge of Extinction 38, she said she stepped in someone's poop immediately after finding the idol.
Yeah, that's gross.
It's gross. I would have of course included her had, yeah, I known that.
Yeah. Okay. So you never know where inspiration is going to strike you, Hannah.
Listen, I just, I'm just kidding about my, the men's health.
So you're,
being
you're
all
worried
friends.
About
I,
some future all-star season that you play and then
I'm
cut
not,
to,
I'm not.
Cut to, then just, somebody's going to say that, I heard Hannah on some podcast one time say, all of my allies are interviewed for men's health. So I went back and I read all of the men's health archives.
Listen, I'm retired for the most part for many reasons, but one of it is I don't have a poker face in terms of I don't approach people outside of this with the desire to fake a friendship for a future alliance. I'm just like, if you're cool, it's genuine. And so I don't think I do very well in it.
Yeah.
They'd be like, I wonder who Hannah likes. Well, maybe it's the people she clearly likes.
Yeah. I should be so lucky that people would pretend to be nice to me for a future Survivor season. I would love that. I would love that because that honestly, there's no difference for me between if you pretend to be nice to me or are actually nice to me. Either one is fine.
The thing I really liked about this season, Winners at War, was they seemed
hungry
like
for more Winners at War.
They sort of acknowledge pregame alliances in a way they sometimes try to pretend like it doesn't exist. I kind of appreciated that. I find that whole pregame dance that I do not play because I am retired to be so fascinating in its own way. And I kind of like that the season, they sort of acknowledged it. I appreciated that. I hope for a future season, the people I've interviewed form the Men's Health Hannah Alliance.
Yes.
That'd be very flattering. All been interviewed for the same poop story.
Hannah,
let's go to the end.
Hannah interviewed Troy Zan about his poop story. So they're working together.
Honestly, I just reach out to the people whose numbers I have or who follow me on Twitter.
Okay. Don't worry. Okay. Hannah, anything else you want to talk about while we have you here? This is such a fun conversation.
I hope that this was a fun distraction for people. I love coming on here and I love going to the live events. I know that's not something we can do anymore, but
we can right now.
Right now. Sorry.
I believe there will be another RHAP live show one day.
I hope so.
I believe it.
I know it's just so much fun, and I feel like a RHAPer at this point, having done this. I think we said this is the sixth time.
I've done the sixth time you've done a real podcast, not counting when we talked about 90 Day Fiance with Akiva or anything like that.
That was really fun.
Yeah. Speaking of TV,
RHAP people will come up to me and they say, "Do you have bras?" Like
I don't think we've even talked about
that. Win, lose, or bra.
That was a big hit on game night.
It was so fun to listen to. You guys did such a good job. For those who, I can't believe you haven't listened to my 90 Day Fiance podcast, but we, on Rob and Akiva, it was a game where they had to guess the price of bras, since I complained that bras can be overpriced.
Yes. Yes. You had said that you had wanted the listeners to, if they wanted to buy any undergarments for you, you would accept them because they're expensive.
But now I have people at events coming up to me offering to buy me bras, which feels intrusive from people I've never met, but I fully set up that scenario to happen.
Yeah, you open the door for that. Okay. What are you watching besides 90 Day Fiance? Anything?
Yeah. It's, quarantine times. I'm going to watch the finale of Schitt's Creek, which was on Tuesday. Yes. I'm really sad. It's, I think, one of the best shows on TV.
Yeah, Mike Bloom and Shannon Gates, I think, have a podcast coming, post-show recaps, to talk about it.
It's a wonderful show. It does what, I wish I could do, which is write extremely flawed characters but make them so lovable. I think sometimes if you try to write people who, at least how they started, so flawed, it ends up being like, oh, but they're not, you don't root for them, but they're the most rootable. It's just so funny, too. I'm trying to think. I have not seen Tiger King.
Okay.
Everyone and their mother has seen Tiger King. My mom really wants me to see Unorthodox on Netflix.
Yes.
So that's going to be
I watched
next
a little bit
on
of
the
that.
Queue.
Yeah.
Hold on.
It's heavy.
It's heavy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it seems like it would be.
Akiva recapped it with Bryce on the Purple Pants podcast.
Oh, interesting. I guess I should
watch the show and then listen to Bryce talk about it with Akiva.
My dad's saying stop playing with the bottle. Oops.
Yeah.
Hold on. I've now This what, is the
benefit
of...
your dad listening to the podcast?
No, my dad's cooking over there, and I think he saw that I was fidgeting. It's the benefit of having a parent here. Instead of a YouTube comment saying, stop fidgeting.
Yeah, thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I have my two favorite shows that are rewatch comfort shows.
What are they?
I know every word and every scene of Parks and Recreation.
Okay.
Your producer, Sam Moore, I don't know what his job title is. He was watching Parks and Rec and he texted me and said, this is the scene I'm in. And I said every single line that would be said after that.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. So I'm actually on my first time through Parks and Rec still, but we're in season six. It's been a very long time. Nicole, that she is like, sometimes she's like, I don't want to watch that anymore.
Who's your favorite character
on Parks and Rec?
That's really tough, but I probably say April. I like the way Aubrey Plaza was cast. She met Mike Schur, I believe, and he just met her and wrote her character into the show because it was so authentically close to her sense of humor. And I think it's just such a unique take on that trope.
Yeah.
And her and Andy falling in love has been described as like watching a cat and a dog fall in love.
Yeah.
I just know that show so well. I love all the characters.
I really love that relationship and the way that they handled it on that show, because I think so many times on sitcoms that I feel like that they get so wrapped up in the will they or won't they, and then they just said, you know what, these two are a thing.
They're married.
And then like the one episode is like, oh yeah, then they're married.
And I love the way they discovered that would be a good fit. There's an episode where everyone goes hunting and they're left back at the office. And the writers have said that they were testing out the chemistry. So not only did they avoid the will they won't they let it naturally. There's a chemistry there that they wanted to see if it was real.
Yeah.
And it was. And I just think it's so well done. And it's just the best. And then the second... of my top two shows.
Well, before you say the second one, can I ask you a follow-up for Parks and Rec?
Sure. I could talk about Parks and Rec all day.
So, famously, Adam Scott is a big Survivor fan.
Oh, I have an Adam Scott story.
Yeah.
I went to what was your question?
I was going
to
ask you about that. Or I know also that
Nick Offerman has said he'd like to play Survivor. I would do anything Nick Offerman wanted if I was on the island. I would lose to him in the end. I don't give a fuck. Excuse me.
Megan Mullally, am I saying that right?
Megan Mullally, yes.
I know she's a big Survivor fan too. I think she might even be bigger than Nick Offerman.
So my funny Adam Scott story is there was a Survivor fan that had a big birthday party, and he's a huge fan. And so we set up all these games and we had buffs, and it was me, Dave, and Cochran, I believe, were the three like Survivor players sort of. Almost like if you hire a clown to come to a birthday party. We were like the
party entertainment. Yeah.
Party. But so we participated.
And there's if you're having a party, there's no entertainment that you could hire that would rival Hannah, David
Cochran,
Wright, and Cochran. That's now, you know.
Yes. Please hire
off the chain.
Please hire me, David Cochran, to come to your birthday. But we were so I was on this team with this woman, and she said, her and I became buddies. We were just like chatting, and she said, oh, my husband is such a big Survivor fan. I think she may have even said, my husband, Adam, you can see where the story is going. And
it was Adam Klein.
It was Adam Klein.
Hannah, I had no idea.
We were here. We're making a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry. My dad is trying to correct me. He goes, no, it was Adam Scott. No, but I go up and she goes, this is the problem with podcasting with your dad cooking next door. He doesn't hear what's happening. So
your stage parents now.
She goes up. I know. She goes up and she's like, "Here's my husband, Adam." And as the Parks and Rec fan, who, like I said, I can say every line in a scene. Adam Scott turns around, and he was excited to meet me, like as the party clown. But I was like, "Oh my!" My biggest regret is not saying, "Hey, like we should snap a picture because you're such a big fan and get a picture with Adam Scott." I was so in shock that the one friend I had made was Adam Scott. And it was just, yeah. And I'm such a big Parks and Rec fan to the point where I'm terrified of like medical things. I'm really bad. I bit a dentist back in the day. But I go to this dentist in LA, and they have a TV on the ceiling. I don't know. And so they play Parks and Rec for me while I get my teeth cleaned and cavities filled.
Can you just tell us quickly about the time you bit the dentist? Were you a baby?
Sure. I want to say I was a baby, but I think I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I'm like looking at my dad for correction.
You didn't like the
dentist. I'm not good at, I'm a person with anxiety. I'm not good at medical things. It's honestly a miracle that in my adulthood, I see a dentist regularly, which I do every 6 months. I get a cleaning, and then the second 6 month, the year mark, I always get the x-rays. It's important, even if you have anxiety, to take care of yourself medically. But didn't like that her hands were in my mouth, so I bit her.
Yeah.
Although I also remember her
Serves
having
her right.
yellow teeth.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid, not judging someone with yellow teeth, but remembering that my dentist had yellow teeth really bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I wouldn't do nose jobs for a living. Like, it wouldn't make sense. I've got my big Aunt Betty's nose. Like, it would, you know. So for me, it was off-putting as
Aunt
a kid.
Aunt Betty's like, what did I do?
Aunt Betty, unfortunately, isn't with us. Great Aunt Betty and Uncle Ed, they were the best. But Great Aunt Betty, I have her nose. And she met me and she told my dad, you could let her get it fixed.
Hannah, what was your second favorite show besides Parks and Rec?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, okay.
I may or may not have a secret Twitter account in which I write jokes as Buffy from Buffy the Vampire
Slayer.
As
Buffy, not as Angel.
No, not as Angel. I prefer the original to the spinoff. Though I did interview David Boreanaz for a Men's Health Magazine article. And I also, it was for his show SEAL Team.
That's
so
how
I didn't
we
get to
all
ask
got
him.
Started with
That's
how
it
much
all began.
It, where we got started talking about how much is David Boreanaz worth. And it's a whole it's
That's
a whole
the
thing.
Whole thing. But I remember, similar to Adam Scott, I've had moments in my life where I get to meet people that play my favorite characters on the television. But yeah, for me, Buffy and Perks are my favorite, and Schitt's Creek being the thing that you know, currently on TV. My dad and I also were watching The Bold Type till the finale, because I met Sarah Watson, who started The Bold Type, is a big Survivor fan. Trying to think if there's any. I know Modern Family had their finale. I have to watch that. The show I really, really miss that ended recently, though, is The Good Place.
Yes.
I was bawling during that finale. It's so beautiful. And I think The Good Place is one of the best shows recently. I keep saying this about Schitt's Creek, The Good Place. Mm-hmm. My friend, Jeff Topolsky, who's a big Survivor fan, who just now is watching my season, for some reason waited years. He writes on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine as well. There's so much. We're in the age of television.
Yeah, this is the time.
This is the time.
All right, Hannah. Well, we had so much fun. You could follow at Hannah Lil Nessen on Twitter.
How long did we go, Rob? How long is this madness?
It's almost like 2.5 hours, I guess.
2.5. Yeah, Hannah Lil Nessen, Rob makes fun of me.
Might be the longest one we've done.
Is this the... it's because we're, you know...
I didn't have anywhere to go.
I mean, me neither. This is the first podcast
I want to hear
done,
more about Parks
studio.
And Rec, but maybe we'll do it another time.
I would do a Parks and Rec podcast in... A second. It's so funny. Like when we had a stressful election day, and me and my upstairs neighbor, who I'm very close with, Josiah, we watched Parks and Rec afterwards, and he kept getting annoyed with me because I kept saying the punchlines to all the jokes.
Well, let me ask you this question. Why don't you do a Parks and Rec podcast? Would that be something that would interest you to go back and watch every episode and talk about every episode? Are you waiting for somebody from?
I would love that. Am I allowed to do it under the RHAP bubble?
We could talk about that. Is that something that you would want to do?
I would do that in a heartbeat. Okay. I know that show and love it so much.
Is somebody already doing that?
I don't know.
Okay. If like a million people are already doing it, Let's see.
Why are you Googling it?
I'm looking it up. Doesn't seem like it, but I'm sure somebody will tell us that there is. Interesting.
Buffy the Vampire, but like, yeah, Parks and Rec. It is interesting considering so many of those people are Survivor fans. I wonder if we made it into South Park, could we get Adam Scott and Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally? Because Megan Mullally played Nick Offerman's love interest
one season.
His ex-wife, Tammy Swanson.
Yeah. All right. Hannah Shapiro, great job. Great job. We still have a lot to do this weekend. I still have This Week in Survivor. Angie Kontz is going to be our guest. And then The Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler, your friend and mine.
Yay.
We'll be back to listen to The Wand Off on Monday. So check that out. Of course, we have still News AF, and then we'll be back with the Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night. Hannah, I don't know if you're aware of this, that I ended up this month, for the month of April, I started a campaign to donate the pledges from all of our new patrons that come on board in the month of April, that we're going to be donating that money to charities that provide PPE for doctors and nurses, and that I was going to be matching that contribution. It turned out to be a wildly successful campaign, to the tune of that this weekend I donated over $5,000 so far to directrelief.org.
Say it again.
Yeah,
I interrupted.
Well, no, that's what's going on.
Directrelief.org.
Directrelief.org. So this weekend I made the first donation for the month of April of over $5,000 to directrelief.org. So we are raising a lot of money for directrelief.org. We also have an additional GoFundMe that we started at robiswebsite.com/PPE charity, where our listeners have now contributed an additional $3,700 that fund, which we will be donating that as well very soon to directrelief.org at robinswebsite.com/PPE charity. And
that's
of course,
so amazing.
It's only
and thank you for
April
everyone
11th.
Who's donating. Well, everyone who's signing up in order to send money, that is amazing. And that's amazing that you're doing that. If anyone's listening who is an essential worker, whether in the medical field or a grocery store worker or whatever it is to keep society functioning during this pandemic, just thank you so much. It's really easy to be worried about myself and my parents, but you guys that are going out there and putting yourself out there to save lives and to get food to people, it's just, thank you so, so much. We owe a debt of gratitude, and we owe more than a debt of gratitude. We owe a higher minimum wage and benefits and a lot of things that I've always believed in, but has become more and more apparent. But if we can't snap our fingers and give all that, let's just say thank you. And to
that
Nicole,
be the first
who's
step.
Still a nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first step is to say thank you. The second step is that essential workers should not have to worry as should be paid.
Yeah, let's not forget about anybody after this is all over.
No. And to those who are at home, whether you're working from home or, I know I lost a lot of job stuff because of staying at home. I know people are struggling, just know that, you're not alone. And I hope everyone's staying at home and staying safe. And like we said, based on the ad today, but like managing your mental health as best you can. And, this is such a fun distraction, but I hope people are doing okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that, Hannah, everybody's very happy to hear from you, especially the people that are still listening. I mean, the people that are not
happy, still listening.
They stopped. They were out a long
Here's
time ago.
Here's the thing. This is my sixth time on. If you know what you're signing up for.
Yeah, I mean, you're
press
two and a half hours in to have
this podcast. At this point, you're two and a half hours in. If you are still listening, please put a peach emoji on your tweet, and I will make sure to respond.
Why a peach emoji?
It's the butt emoji.
Oh, okay.
And Tazzy, Hannah Lil Nesson.
Peach's butt?
Peach's, yeah, Peach's butt and eggplant is other things.
Hmm. Okay.
My dad accidentally once sent an eggplant to a girl because he was making eggplant Parmesan, but he didn't realize.
Who's this girl? Does Liz know about this?
It was a family friend. She knows now. My mom knows now. And I told dad, how could you send her such a dirty text? And he said, I was making eggplant Parmesan. She asked me what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But do we hashtag this something? Or well, is
what
that
do you
want to
hashtag it? Do we get hashtag it?
Well, let's think. Hashtag.
What does Bob think? Is Bob yelling out?
Dad, what do you think hashtags? We should hashtag this?
Yeah.
He shrugged.
Hmm.
Do you have any? Because we could do hashtag Bob and Liz since they made an appearance.
Okay, there you go.
B-O-B and Liz. Oh, and Pache, my dog.
How do you P-A-C-E. Spell that? How do you spell that?
It's P-A-C-E. It's peace in Italian and Latin. So okay. It's hashtag Bob and Liz and Pache.
Okay. All right. There you go. Great
Thank
job.
You so much for having me on again.
Yes.
Honestly, it's so fun to come on every time. And I'm
we
so
always
appreciative.
Have fun. We always have fun. Thank you guys so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.